baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and you fill in the blank. Summer and Chevy go together like road trips and sunshine. Check out the full line of Chevy SUVs and trucks at your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers today. Chevy, drive Chicago.
We were talking, full disclosure, we were talking before we went on the air. Obviously, it's been a hell of a week on a lot of levels. And if anything happens that you need to know about, you will know about it right here. And we're going to react to some of the things at some point. We will also be talking about one of the personal losses to us in a little while, Aubrey Mumpower, wonderful friend, WGN engineer, and some other things. But we're also going to try and, because it's been that kind of a week, one of the things we try to do is provide a little bit of safe harbor.
Right.
Where everybody can kind of chill out for a little bit. But that doesn't mean we're not aware of or paying attention to tons of stuff.
Yes, yes. In fact, I was in the newsroom, and Ron, you got televisions and monitors and
very closely monitoring, because it could happen at any moment. You know, of course, everybody's aware of what we're talking about, the strikes in Iran and the retaliation. Of course, they're vowing, you know, swift retaliation, and they've said that that would happen in moments from now. So we're hoping that the Iron Dome can catch those missiles and keep Tel Aviv safe. But we will keep an eye on it and let you know.
I was telling Ron that this takes me back to the Gulf War, and with the time difference, with us being on overnight.
On the air the night the Gulf War broke out.
And a lot of things happened because it would be daybreak over there. And then people would come into the station at, 6, 7 o'clock in the morning. Well, things are quiet. You weren't here in the middle of the night. I mean, we literally were going through a war.
Well, and a lot of the things that we talked about and some of the people we talked with wound up making the morning newscast because it was breaking news.
Sure, sure. So, again, the time difference is such that, yes, we're right on top of it. So stay with us. As you said, just to give you a place to kind of sit and chill for a few hours and hopefully entertain you. And you can always get to us at 312-981-7200. In fact, we've already got a ton of texts coming in.
Yeah.
And we did take some pictures on the way into work tonight. The last of February. We were driving in when you became aware of that.
I did one of those Homer Simpson, because as I was sending out the some of the information for the show planning we do, and I put February 28th/29th. What?
I said,
what,
no.
In what universe does that have?
Yeah.
Well, who knows what universe we're in right now. So
yes. Hopefully, tomorrow will be March 1st.
Yeah,
we're counting on that. Yes. So we'll be on the air when we get to Rabbit, Rabbit, Rabbit.
That's right.
Yeah.
So we need to play some Eddie Rabbit songs.
No. Ron, do you know
him.
Rabbit, Rabbit, Rabbit at the first of a new month?
I just know that it's a...
It's a thing?
Not a habit, but it's a thing that you do.
And, yes.
It's been going on for a while, and a lot of different people doing it. And it's supposed to be good luck, is that it?
It is good luck, yes. And it goes back to, on this radio station, way back, Wally Phillips would do the children in France would get to school on the first day of a month, and everybody would rabbit, 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 because it would mean good luck for the coming month.
And there are arguments among people who have worked at this radio station. Well, is it three rabbits or two rabbits?
Or is it two rabbits, yes. So anyway, we decided when we started the overnight show that we got to rabbit, rabbit, rabbit at midnight every month for years. So we continue doing that on our Facebook pages and have fun looking for the appropriate graphic, because Steve has to have rabbits that play guitars.
Well, yeah.
And there are not a lot of rabbits that play guitar.
So I may put up my three pictures of Eddie Rabbit with his guitar.
Right.
I may do that again.
That's right,
I did that a while back. But Ron, in this past week, have you seen the Elvis movie?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
So, Ron, you saw the movie. What did you think?
Oh, I liked it a lot. That song, Elvis was, I'd never seen this before, him sitting on stage.
Mm-hmm. Playing a beautiful Gretsch guitar.
Yes, playing the guitar. He's playing, you know, rhythm. He wasn't playing the lead, right. But it was still, you just didn't see that very often in Elvis shows. But it does span a few years. When he comes out with the white jumpsuit in like about 1969, you say he was fit. He looked skinny. I mean, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, he looked like Adonis. I mean, he was just absolutely, you just stopped and stared. And it was just a fascinating movie. A little uneven. I mean, they show some of the later years with the, you know, the red jumpsuit and the blue jumpsuit. You can tell the difference.
Yeah.
But it was still very, very good. And if you're an Elvis fan, you're going to love it.
And you saw it in IMAX?
I saw it in IMAX, yeah, so the sound was great.
Mm-hmm. So it cost Baz Luhrmann $10 million to make the movie. And I was surprised because looking at the box office returns, and it's like in 195 theaters. Why wouldn't you have a wider release?
Well, they
because
will.
This was just the IMAX release.
Yeah, this is just the IMAX. And it went just a wider release
Friday.
On Friday, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so there's hope for it, but I understand it's up against another documentary, which, frankly, I've heard nothing about. What about 21 Pilots, More Than We Ever Imagined, live in Mexico City? Apparently, that movie, overnight, Friday into Saturday, is bringing in more money than Epic, the Elvis documentary.
Probably a wider release.
What do you know about that one?
This is the first I'm hearing of it.
21 Pilots, More Than We Ever Imagined, live in Mexico City.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Don't know anything about that.
And it looks like it's not killing the epic Elvis movie, but I'm like, where did it come from? What's it about?
But based on everything I'm hearing, I think the Elvis movie, not just because I'm an Elvis fan, I think this one's going to have legs.
Yeah, probably.
Word of mouth. When I saw it on IMAX. I saw it on a Wednesday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a good number of people there. There was applause at the end of the movie.
Hmm.
I was one of the youngest people in the...
Really?
I was. And it was nice to see.
Yeah.
I mean, there were people, you know, coming in with walkers. And they were still Elvis fans. They were going to see their Elvis in their IMAX. And I would say, I'm just thinking of a count, I would say there were about 50 to 60 people there.
Wow.
for a movie. Yeah. In the afternoon. It's a pretty good deal.
In the middle of the week, sure.
Yeah, in the middle of the week.
Yeah.
And I'm hearing from some friends that have been to some of the IMAX movies where there were some younger people, too.
Mm-hmm.
That are now kind of getting into Elvis and understanding, oh, he wasn't just the fat Elvis that everybody lampoons. Yeah, there was some substance here.
Oh, yeah.
I also had a report of people dancing in the aisles. I thought, we need that. We need a reason to get up and dance.
Yeah, I'm telling you. It was it was great to see Elvis back up on stage. One thing, the one thing that I was critical of was the narration that we had heard about. Mm-hmm. Was that they found some audio tape and they were going to use that. And Elvis, in his own words, he was going to tell his own story. Most of it, 90% of it, was archival audio and archival video of these press conferences.
Mm-hmm.
And these interviews that we'd all seen before. So there wasn't really anything new, no new insight or anything like that. As far as Elvis documentaries, as far as learning stuff, the one on HBO a few years ago called The Searcher, that was much better as far as information wise.
Okay,
but this to see him on stage and doing the Las Vegas and doing backstage and doing rehearsals, this is quite good. And if you're an Elvis fan, you're going to like it, Steve.
So
and Johnny.
Looking at the 3-day total for this weekend's box office, and again, they're just projecting because they don't know what Saturday night and Sunday are going to be, but it looks like number 5 will be Epic, the Elvis movie. Number 4 will be this 21 Pilots movie. Forgive me, it may be a brilliant movie, but we're all going, huh?
Julian, 21 Pilots, should we know?
Okay, good. I don't know.
Okay, all right.
Number 3 at the box office will be Wuthering Heights. Number 2 will be Goat, G-O-A-T. And number 1 will be Scream 7. Are you going to see that one, Ron?
I've already seen that.
Yeah, really?
I did, and I mean, it's a franchise. I don't think it's as good as like the first one, but
it's seven.
It's what you expect. You know what? I'm not giving any spoilers. You know, people die.
No.
And there's a bad guy.
That's what happens. And there's a bad guy. Yeah. There is, and there's some screaming going on.
Okay.
So it's you know what you're going to get when you go to one of those movies. It's the seventh installment. How do you keep it fresh? They tried, but. But, if you've seen the others, you're going to go see this one.
Bob, 21 Pilots?
He's doing some research over there.
No ideas.
Really?
Okay, fine.
No, I mean, you know, never seen it.
There is one other documentary that I'm curious about. I don't know. I'm not sure if it's going to be on the big screen or not. That's the Paul McCartney documentary.
Oh, it is. It was in. That's already streaming on Prime right now. It was in theaters for a limited release. I saw that, too. That was very, very good.
Yeah, it started streaming on Prime yesterday.
Yeah.
And it's free.
And that's mostly him in his Wings era?
Yeah, they get into the breakups of the Beatles and all of that. It was him with his self-doubt, if you can even think that's possible, after the Beatles broke up. It's like, how do you follow that up? And so as we know, I mean, he kind of retired to his ranch in Scotland, and he did some, you know, mediocre, I guess, you know, if I could say that about Paul McCartney, not his best work. And he said he just needed a break. He, you know, rather than the pressure of being the greatest songwriter, you know, or one of the two greatest songwriters alive and in the greatest band, he just needed a mental break. And so he just sat down and wrote some quiet little songs and thought, that's enough. I'm not, you know, trying to top the charts right now. And later on, he got that, you know, competitive fire again and put together some really, really good songs with Wings.
In the interest of closure, 21 Pilots is a 2026 concert film capturing the band's massive Mexico City show from the Clancy World Tour. It premiered this weekend. It features behind the scenes and exclusive commentary and follows the band's 2022 cinema experience. The movie showcases their arena performances with 65,000 fans. So, obviously, with 65,000 fans in the arena, we are out of the loop.
Yeah.
All of us.
I'll check it out and then report back.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to look into it. By the way, speaking of music, a little later tonight, we're going to reconnect with Susie Boggess.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be the first time we've talked to Susie since she is now officially a member of the Grand Ole Opry, and she will be making her first solo Grand Ole Opry appearance as a member of the Grand Ole Opry this coming Wednesday
night. Great. Yes, yes, yes.
She may know about 21 Pilots.
Oh, yeah, okay.
wouldn't surprise me.
She'd be like, oh, yeah, good friends of mine.
Okay. We said at the outset that this has been a hell of a week on a lot of levels, not the least a personal loss to us and a lot of the members of the WGN family. Aubrey Mumpower, who was with WGN Engineering for many years.
Decades.
And was a dear friend. Sadly, we lost Aubrey this week. He'd been dealing with some health issues. And if you go to our blog, you'll see we did a post, and it's about on that wonderful day for WGN. And you'll see a picture of Aubrey. And I will never forget, and we mentioned it on the blog, the first time we met Aubrey was the first time we were being given a tour of what was the then new WGN studios in the Tribune Tower. And Dan Fabian was walking us through what was Studio A. And he's explaining things. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this head pops up out of the floor.
Out of the floor.
Yeah.
And we all went, ah! That with that wild silver curly hair, Arlo Guthrie is what we always called him. He was our Arlo Guthrie. He was our hippie. That head was sticking up out of the floor because he was under the floor doing all the wiring. With us in the studio is Krista Flores, who is an engineer, who was a very close friend of Aubrey's.
Yeah. Every day I wake up, you know, when you wake up and it's just like everything. You know, you remember everything, you know, like you have a few seconds where you're just waking up and it's like, oh, yeah, everything's coming back to me. And it's like, I've just been numb. Yeah. I've just been numb. Because I knew that he was in bad shape. I mean, I've seen him twice in the last 6 months.
And you were
months.
At the hospital
I took him to the hospital twice, once he escaped.
Well, it was okay, because wasn't that when there was no air conditioning
the week
in the
later,
hospital?
Yeah.
I'm like, I would escape too if there was no AC in the hospital.
Couldn't blame him too much on that one. But then I kept following up with him, and he wasn't in any better condition. Yeah. So I'm like, no, we're taking you back. And he was good. He stayed there a week and a half. Mm-hmm. This was at Northwestern. He ate well. He was happy. The main
had
thing
a good
was
view.
They were feeding him. My favorite was I went to go visit him, and I messaged him. I said, hey, I'm going to stop by work. I'm going to park at work, and then I'll walk over. And as I'm walking over, my phone's ringing, and I missed it. So I went, I wish I would have saved the message. I thought I did. So I listened to it. He's like whispering. He's like, hey, it's me. Stop at CVS if you can. He's like, sneak in some chocolates and some cookies. Because one thing Aubrey was known for was he always carried bags and bags of emergency food. And it's just like, that was such an Aubrey thing. But
he used to get his groceries at Walgreens on Michigan Avenue. He'd go across from the Tribune Tower, and he'd come back with, what are you carrying? We'd look in it, and it would be cookies and
chips. Literally bags and bags.
Bags, yes.
One of the, Ben Cortez, one of the other engineers, I guess years ago, one of his kids was having, like, you know, they sell chocolate bars or whatever. Aubrey bought like all four boxes. He's like, well, this is a heck of a lot cheaper than buying them from Walmart or Walgreens. So he just bought them all.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Oh, we talked about him so often because he was our engineer on the overnight show. And
well, as a matter of fact, I will never forget, for a lot of Christmas Eves, we did a show with the Woodstock High School Choir. Mm-hmm. Now, in the Tribune Tower studio, it was actually sort of two console situations next to each other. And we would have 40 kids from the Woodstock High School Choir. Mm-hmm. And at that time, the station was broadcasting in AM stereo. And I would engineer the half on my side. Aubrey would engineer the half on his side.
And we'd have kids lined up through the whole studio, side by side.
Yeah.
And we'd always apologize. He goes, no, I look forward to this. This is something different. This is exciting. Nobody's doing this, live music. And of course, the kids were like, wow, that's a hippie dude. He's so cool, you know, and he was so mellow, you know, just kind of floating around quietly. And it's interesting that he became an engineer, and it was so natural for him because he came from a railroad family where there were engineers in his family, and railroading was in his blood. If you got him started talking about that.
He would always tell me that his three favorite things in the world were radio, cats, and trains. Not necessarily in that order. But every year, he would reach out to, even after he retired, he would reach out to me and be like, hey, when you can, stop by. I've got the station calendar. So he would get these Union Pacific calendars that we would put up in MC and then one in the studio.
Oh.
And this year, you know, he had... I would like log in every now and again to Facebook Messenger just to see if he was active, just kind of checking up on him. And, you know, I sent him a text, you know, how are you feeling? And it took him a week to get back, which is really unusual. And he finally got back and he's like, oh, he's like, you know, same. And then he goes, but I've got your calendars whenever you want to pick them up. And I said, well, I'll find a way to get down there. So I unfortunately wasn't able to get him. But yeah, it was he loved radio, trains,
and cats.
Well, and whatever was going on, he would end the conversation on an upbeat note.
Yeah.
That was just Aubrey's nature.
You see Aubrey, and it's just like you say, you don't know what to, it's like, oh my goodness, but the heart of, oh my gosh, he would give you, literally, people say, oh, they'd give you the shirt off your back. He actually would.
Yeah.
He actually would.
And when you
would.
Got into work, you could be having a stressful trip into work, but he would say, welcome to work.
Yeah.
And very calmly, like, oh, okay. Well, I have somebody on my side in here. Now, you are being recognized for being with this radio station for 25 years.
Congratulations.
I started when I was 15.
Well, yes. I was going to say 13.
I like that better.
You got a nice certificate today.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Mary took me out to lunch on Friday. So, yeah, it was really nice. It was really nice. So, yeah. Never in a million years thought that.
Well, so it must have been before 25 years ago when we were working with Aubrey. And at that time, he had 6 cats.
He would always, and Sheffield was the one he talked about the most.
Sheffield,
I would hear Sheffield,
Ashlyn,
Damon.
Yep.
He had all Northside City Street. Did he have Wrigley? I think he had a Wrigley.
I don't remember Wrigley, but I would not be surprised.
He had Clark, I think.
I think Clark, Clark. Yeah. Yeah. His most recent one was Kaw. Uh-huh. K-A, so you know where that one came from?
No. No.
So Adam Phillips, another engineer here, his Adam lives in Kankakee. Mm-hmm. So his neighbor had, you know, was feeding the stray cat. And this was after Aubrey had lost, you know, Boo, the one prior to this one. And I'm like, Aubrey, you know, you want another cat. And he's like, no, it's too soon. It's too soon. And then he, you know, it's like coming up on Halloween. So he's like, well, I don't want any kids messing with the cats. He's like, have Adam bring him down. So he's like, I got to think of a name. So, you know, he's like, Kaw, Kankakee. So
yeah,
K-A.
That's the abbreviation.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And it's just that's just how he thought. That's just how he thought.
And speaking of cats, I will never forget. I had a cat that had been with me since before I met Johnny. Then my dad moved in with us, and we had this wonderful little Cocker Spaniel. And the cat and the dog were fighting like cats and dogs.
And we were really stressed because we would come to work at night with them separated and think, well, what's going to happen while we're gone?
And we were telling Aubrey about it, and he said, well, what you do is when you go home, when they come up to you, you pet the cat with your right hand, you pet the dog with your left hand, then you switch hands, and you're petting them with the other hands, and you're mixing their scent. We did it, and it within hours, now they're a member of the same tribe,
they're
and they're best friends.
Aww. We're like, that simple? I mean, we thought we were going to have to give one of them away.
Yeah.
And yet at that point, Steve had the cat for 19 years. It's like, that's not going to happen. So, but it's such an interesting person. And
remember the night that we first met, we'd been friends with Les Paul for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But this was the first night that we met Les in person. So he comes over after he had played. We saw him at the House of Blues. Then he comes over. And he's hanging out with us.
Mm-hmm.
And Aubrey was the engineer that night. And Aubrey goes on a break.
And when he was on the break, he would go out for a cigarette.
Yeah.
Because
Camel unfiltered was his.
Yes. But when he was out there, he could flip the speaker on so he could still monitor the station while he was having his 7-minute break out there. But as he walked through the tower, he saw these two young boys with guitar cases. Now, they were not old enough to get into the House of Blues, but they had driven down from Wisconsin with their guitars.
And they heard that Les was on the air.
On the air, and they were hoping that they could just stand in the lobby and listen, and security didn't kick them out. And Aubrey said, oh, you look innocent enough. I'll vouch for you. Come with me. And he set them up in the green room. And when we were done, and Les had been with us for about 3 hours, and it's 4 o'clock in the morning, and Aubrey said, would you mind going over and speaking to these boys? I got goosebumps because those boys were out of their minds. They opened their guitars up. They didn't have a Les Paul guitar, but listen, now you got one.
Yeah. It was one of the kids had I think it was a Telecaster.
Yes.
And the kid said, I'm sorry, I don't have a Les Paul guitar. And Les said, give it to me. He signs it and he says, now you do.
Wow. Wow.
And then that night, Aubrey drove him back to the hotel and there was a snowstorm. So he drove him all over downtown.
That's what he would do.
Yes.
That's just what he would do.
And Les was just so out of his mind because he had spent so many years. He took him to the Chicago Theater. That's where Les had played and all of these sites downtown.
I should have brought it in tonight because we have a text. Actually, it's in our book.
Mm-hmm.
Where Les sent us a text when he got home days later about his trip to Chicago, and he mentioned Aubrey in the text.
Yeah. Aww. In fact, we mentioned Aubrey in our book to thank him because he took such good care of him. Les was like, well, I'll come back anytime, you know. Because he said, do you want to go to get a bite to eat? No. I can take you anywhere you want. You want to go to Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, my favorite was whenever you pass him in the hall, we're like, oh, hey, Aubrey, how are you doing? He had this same saying he would say all the time, diligently pursuing excellence in my chosen profession.
We should get
that
the
was
T-shirt.
His go-to line.
let's make the T-shirt with that. We'll wear it to work.
Spending a few minutes remembering a member of the WGN family that we lost this past week, Aubrey Mumpower. You may not know the name. You may not have heard him, although sometimes Aubrey would be on the air with us. But boy, you certainly heard the results of the product that he had worked
on. And if you listened to our show, you heard us thank him.
And,
regularly.
And another person who nobody loved Aubrey Moore and Aubrey, Milt Rosenberg.
Yes.
Absolutely. After Milt left WGN, Aubrey continued to work with him and was doing podcasts and helping him out till the very end. Just absolute, just mutual. I remember when I went with Aubrey to, we were invited by Milt's son to, not necessarily a funeral, but one of the things they said was, you know, Milt's favorite engineer is here, you know, Aubrey Mumpower.
Oh, sweet.
Like, yeah.
That is.
And that tells you a lot about Aubrey, too, because I'm not telling tales out of school. Management was afraid of Milt.
Yeah. We were all afraid of Milt.
But right. Aubrey was just so chill, and we were talking off the air.
It's true.
Again, if you, those of you who remember Arlo Guthrie at Alice's Restaurant, that's kind of what Aubrey looked like. Or you can go to our blog and you can look up the post. The post is A Sad Day for the WGN Family, and you'll see a picture of Aubrey. But we were talking about off the air. Aubrey was a ladies' man.
Yes.
He really was. I don't know what it was, he attracted women like...
I can recall saying to some of the female producers, the newbies around here, so what'd you do this weekend? I went skiing for the first time ever. Aubrey taught me how to ski. And I'm like, what? Yeah, because he'd say, you want to know how to ski? Because that was another thing that he really, really loved.
Yeah.
He was raised skiing, and he said that his dad skied until he was 80.
Yeah,
and it's going to keep me going, so I'm going to keep skiing.
In fact, we should mention you can go to the the Steve and Johnny Facebook page, and one of our listeners put up a video of Aubrey skiing.
And she said, don't forget that he might have been a fine engineer, but he was an exceptional skier, too.
Yeah. Well, I remember when we moved. Was it when we moved over here? Or I know it was one time after Aubrey retired. There was over at the Tribune Tower. There was a young security guard, a young female security guard that he would always. You know, she worked the overnight shift, so he would always. After we moved over here and Aubrey wasn't here anymore, she stopped by just because she wanted to see Aubrey. And it's like, and all the other guys are like what the heck is going on here?
That's funny.
And remember, there was, I forget what the event was, but it was a whole bunch of us, and we went to Chinatown.
We did.
And Aubrey brought his then significant other, who was introduced to us as the Dragon Lady.
I've heard about the Dragon Lady.
Yes. We took our whole team, the all-night team, for Chinese New Year.
Yes.
And he was always game. Yeah, I'll be there. Yeah. And
didn't he recommend the restaurant?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And the Dragon Lady.
I remember hearing about the Dragon Lady. That's very familiar.
And I don't remember her name, but was just the Dragon Lady.
Yes, yes.
And there was so many New Year's Eves. Mm-hmm. That Aubrey was with us in the showcase studio and the regular studio and then in the showcase studio.
Mm-hmm. Running wires from the master control down the hall and up the steps and in the door and around the corner.
Because we would have, there was one year we had those darn accordions and he had to run some special wiring. If you can imagine, I will never forget this, and somewhere we've got the recording of 12 accordion players playing Led Zeppelin, Whole Lot of Love.
I know. It was actually good.
It was so weird.
It was good. It was weird, but good. Well, I know he was retired from the radio station, but it's so interesting because very often I go through Master Control and you just feel like, you know, you're going to see him sitting over there.
That's just it. There's just like, even though I know he's gone, I still don't believe it. I mean, you know, as you get older, you deal with a lot of deaths. Yeah. And, you know, in the last 5 years, I've dealt with a lot. And but there was something, Aubrey was always there, you know, and it's just, it doesn't feel real. It still doesn't feel real. I don't know when it's going to hit.
One of the nicest compliments came from a former general manager of this radio station, Tom Langmuir.
Yeah.
He wrote it was on one of our pages, on Facebook pages, how some of his favorite times were dropping into the station overnight because he knew Aubrey would be there. And he enjoyed talking with Aubrey about broadcasting and all kinds of things.
And they bonded on cats.
Yeah.
And railroads.
Yes.
And photography and all that other good stuff.
Yeah. He was, you had to know him. It's like, never, I'll never meet anybody like him.
Yeah.
I mean, he was one of a kind in so many good ways. And I,
but you know, I'm sitting here thinking about the picture that we have on our blog and the video that the listener posted on our Facebook page. How could the man's hair stay the same length, the same gray, the same curls?
He knew something.
For 3 decades, it was the same. And I'm thinking, well, he never had dark hair. He never had short hair. It was always the
same. It was always the same.
Since the 80s.
You know, I just happen to think a part of Aubrey's broadcast career that we didn't mention, a lot of people are familiar with the U, Channel 26. Back in the early days of Channel 26, Aubrey worked at that television station back in the early days of Soul Train.
And he told stories about they would have live animals on their shows on the U. And he said, I'd open the elevator door and there would be like a tiger walking out.
Knowing Aubrey, you'd want to take it home.
Right. Crazy stories. Well, thank you for stopping by and reminiscing because he was such an important part of this radio station, as are you.
Thanks.
And we're very fortunate because when Aubrey retired, we were given Bob. The keeper of the big plug.
And another lover of cats. So.
Yes.
The tradition continues.
So we've been lucky for 40 years that we've been at this radio station that we've had great engineers.
Well, thank you.
Well, because
I love cats.
Who love cats. Yes, that was a requirement.
In fact, didn't you have to put that on your resume for Aubrey to approve you that you loved cats?
Yeah, before you could get the gig.
Must love cats.
Right. Well. But, you know, it's important when you're doing a show like this, especially when we bring in live entertainment.
Yeah, you want
to. You want to be sure that people care enough to make it, because we can do our part on this side, but we can't do that part that you guys do on your side.
Yeah, well, thank
you. So it's really important to have somebody that goes, yeah, we're going to make this sound great. Not just good, but great. Yeah.
Well, and one of the things also that we have always appreciated about Aubrey and about you two, if there is a problem, nobody panics.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's like, oh, okay. Yeah, well, okay, well, here's this workaround we'll do, and that makes a huge difference.
We'll figure it out.
Yes,
you know.
Yes. Which
panicking
works
isn't going to
my personality, because if you start to panic, then I'm gone. And then I'm going to open the live mic and go, ah! So as long as you guys are cool, I'm like, okay, we can get through this. Whatever this happens to be, we can do it. So, well, thank you guys, both of you, Bob and Kristen.
Well, I'll do shirts. Diligently pursuing excellence in our chosen profession.
And it is our chosen profession.
We're going to do that.
That's right. Yeah. And again, congratulations on 25
thank you.
Years.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
And again, if you would like to see a picture of Aubrey, go to our blog. And
we won't take a picture of Krista because she'll hide under the countertop.
Well, we have a picture of Krista. The one where she's hiding behind the
I have a picture
a
of me on my Facebook page. It is maybe 25 years old, but it's me. So okay. I have taken a picture before.
But if you want,
and if you saw her, you'd say, "Why does she have a problem taking pictures?"
No.
If you want to get an idea what Aubrey looked like, go to our blog at stevenjohnny.wordpress.com and scroll down to the post that says "A Sad Day for the WGN Family," and you will find a picture of Aubrey just looking like Aubrey. And again, that's the hair he had when he walked into the station, and that's the hair he had when he walked out
of
the station.
Right. Yes, yes. Again, thank you guys. Really appreciate it. And as we loved him, and I'm glad that we could spend a few minutes.
Yeah.
And
he was
share.
One of the really good ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you all should have a friend like him at some point in your life. You should be that lucky.
We have a lot more coming up. We're going to reconnect with Susie Baugus.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a little later tonight, we're going to remember Neil Sedaka.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, what a talent. And you and I were talking earlier, we can't believe he's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
If anybody
belongs in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it's Neil Sedaka. So we'll talk about him and a whole lot more coming up. But for the first time, we would like to officially welcome to the show Grand Ole Opry member Susie Baugus.
Hi, you guys.
Hi.
How are you?
Great. Congratulations, girl. The past 6 months have been crazy for you.
They really have. I'm starting to
starting to decompress after everything, but it's been kind of nutty.
Yeah.
And I don't expect that when I just had my 69th birthday,
mm-hmm.
and it's like you just don't expect that to be happening to you at this point.
Well, that's what you said when you were inducted into the Rock Hall for Illinois, the Route 66. You were like, I didn't expect this. The pride of Alito, Illinois.
No.
Of course you had to be inducted.
Oh, before we get to all that, I have to say I'm very glad that we're able to talk to you, because I assume this means that you now have your power back on in Nashville?
Gosh. Oh, you guys, it's still a mess here. It's just, it's really hard. And, all of us have, drug all of our tree limbs and stumps and everything else out to the road, and they're trying to clear it up.
Really?
As a matter of fact, I think we just lost Susie.
We may have. We sure did.
Okay, we'll let... Julian reestablish.
She was on the road and knew.
I believe she was staying with friends in
Florida.
In Florida, when that horrible storm hit Nashville,
and knew she was going to come home to no power.
Yeah.
And, well, what does that mean? And how interesting, though, that they're still feeling the effects of that.
I'm not sure what it means that we start talking about power outages in Nashville and we lose Susie.
Weird.
I must be all the stumps and stuff in our yard. I'm not exaggerating, but I mean, because, everybody's taking their stuff out to their ditches and everything. I mean, there's just like, it still looks horrid around.
It looks
Nashville
like a hurricane has
Franklin,
come.
Franklin, where I live. And
yeah.
Our front yard, we have a ditch, and you know how long a tour bus is,
mm-hmm.
like 45 feet. We have at least 45 feet of branches and stumps and stuff. This is just from our yard,
mm-hmm.
that is, 6 feet tall. And the thing is because it's been there and we're still getting some, wind and stuff like that, it's treacherous to drive around here. You have to, really be watching because, there are still branches sticking out into the roads. And, sometimes you have to veer over the line and, just make sure mm-hmm. everybody's taking turns to make sure that we can all get around. But it's really been... it's been crazy, and there's all these giant trucks driving around here. I've never seen a truck like the kind that are picking up our branches and stuff. They're these big, long metal trucks, and they're double. So it's like a truck that's pulling another truck.
Like a train.
And, almost.
Yeah.
It's like when you see a double semi or something mm-hmm. like that, but they're a really different kind of truck, really high sides and very dark. It looks a little grim, I'll tell you the truth.
Well, now, you were in Florida while all this was going on. What was that like? You're out of state, right. and you don't know what the heck is going on with your house or any of the equipment or instruments you have in your house. What was that like?
Yeah, it was pretty weird. And here's the deal. It was like, I had all this stuff going on from, September to, the middle of January. And we had planned this 2 weeks of writing songs with some of our best friends, Gretchen Peters and her husband, Barry Walsh, and Jeff Han.
Oh.
Okay.
And again.
Ooh. Oh, it's going to be one of those nights.
Yeah.
Okay.
When we hear, again, it could be because where she is.
I'm not superstitious or anything, but I'm thinking third time's a charm, and maybe we should move away from talking about the nasty power
weather.
Outage in Nashville.
Right.
So.
I was just thinking that people are going to think it's the apocalypse here in Nashville.
Well, I want to take you back. I'm looking at my text feed. It was October 12th, 12:58 a.m. We're on the air getting ready to go to a newscast. I look down at my phone and I read, guess who's going to be the newest member of the Grand Ole Opry? And I wrote back and I said, can we announce this on the radio? And you said, sure, go ahead. So 3 months later, you had your big night, January 16th at the Grand Ole Opry. So tell us, what was that night like?
Oh, my gosh, you guys. It was so insane. I can't even tell you how much love I felt. It was insane. I had 39 cousins come into town from all sorts of states, California and Boston and Florida. And I mean, Boston's not a state. I know that. But all over the place. And I had my brother and his family were here, and my sister and brother-in-law were here, and all of my college roommates came into town.
Wow.
One from Napa, one from D.C., and one from Chicago, and like a whole bunch of my old bandmates. And it was just like, it was like the most amazing feeling to just have everybody here. It was, Kathy Mateo, like, she had kind of coined it before, but she was dead on when she said to me, it's like a wedding, a funeral, and this is your life all wrapped into one.
Susie, I have to tell you that, and this may sound weird, one of the moments that I teared up at was watching you backstage as you were putting your plaque up on the wall.
Oh, yeah, I know, me too.
It felt
so weird.
But for people who don't know about this, this is a part of that whole night. Can you explain how far back this tradition goes?
It goes all the way back. You first of all, you get a mailbox, and you also get a locker.
Oh.
So that you can, keep your cowboy boots there in case, you, for some reason, leave them by the dining room table, which I've done a number of times. So you keep something, in your locker just in case you need it that night. And then you have a mailbox there. And I have some fans that are just so wonderful and dedicated. And they've been sending me letters whenever I was going to be performing on the Opry. But now I actually have my own box, and it doesn't have to be sitting at the desk,
Uh-huh.
It's going to be so cool to go and check in my mailbox and see what I got. And I don't know how to explain it. But, I usually have been assigned the Women of Country's dressing room.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really beautiful. It's very, ornate and very kind of Victorian, lots of sparkles and pretty. But all the women's faces are on the walls, and it's everyone. It's Connie, and it's, Tammy Wynette, and
Loretta
Klein, and everybody's up there from through the years. And when I got to put my picture on that wall, I really kind of lost it. It was pretty amazing.
It's pretty heavy stuff, yeah.
So it was cool. It was really cool. And I wasn't something that I was like going, if I don't ever get into the Grand Ole Opry, I'm going to be so disappointed. I wasn't feeling like that. It was just, I always thought, if it's supposed to happen, it will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's a later time than lots of people would have thought that I would get in. But the thing is, there were so many singers, so many female singers. I hate that I have to even say it that way. But, from the 90s that have been, members for years and years. I mean, we just celebrated I think Pam Tosa's 25th year.
Mm-hmm.
I know Harry Clark's been in for 20. I don't know how long Wynonna's been in there. I mean, years and years and years. And so many people that, I consider my peers during the time that we were having radio hits together. And I thought, in a way, maybe that's all they can do from that time period, because there's Lori's in there. I mean, Patti Loveless, just on and on and on. And so, it was just pretty cool. And, I was so tickled for Kathy because, Kathy Mattea actually, she was already making records before I even moved into town.
Hmm.
And, I remember the first place that I worked, I sang demos at a guy named John Denny's publishing company. $10 a song, you know. And so I was in there, and there was this album, which is before we had CDs. And so there's this album, and it was Kathy Mateus, you know, sitting on the table or whatever. And I was just like, oh, I don't know her. I'm going to have to figure out who she is. And, you know, 10 years later, she's like my best friend. It's a crazy thing.
Reba McEntire flew in to be a part of the induction, too.
She did. She's so great. I mean, this is a funny thing, but, you know, back when we were all, like, burning it up, we were on the road so much that it was kind of hard to keep and really make a good relationship with other peers. You know, like if you were touring, usually females, we would be touring in front of the dudes, you know, there'd be a couple of guys on, and then, you know, we'd be the chick singer in the front, you know. So we didn't tour together very much. And, you know, it wasn't until later that it became, you know, obvious that we all had so much in common that we wanted to get to know each other. And so, you know, we've been having get-togethers, you know. A lot of us like to cook, and all of us like to eat. And so, you know, we get together and we just yak and have a great time. And so that was happening, you know, before this. And so I'd already had a chance to kind of get closer to Reba and Trisha. And, of course, you know, Terry and Pam and I toured. And then Kathy and I toured together and have been, you know, big buddies for many, many years. So, it was pretty darn special having everybody there.
Well, you looked wonderful. I was trying to imagine what it would feel like standing up there, and then you've got your guitar and you have to sing, and you just want to just go, ah, you people, this is too much for me.
Really, that's the truth. And you know what's funny is that when I stepped into the circle to do Someday Soon that night, my first song from before the induction part happened, I was really nervous. I mean, I had all these relatives. I had all these fans that had flown in from all over. And I was, like, sweating bullets, and I was shaky. And about two lines into the song, it was like somebody else took over and just said, okay, come on. You can't do this now. Get it together. And it was just like, it's like I took a deep breath, and it just, like, I just sat into my boots, and I was just, all of a sudden I was like, oh, I'm supposed to be here. It's okay.
Cool. That's really cool. Stepping into the circle for people who've not been to the Grand Ole Opry, or they don't understand it, that's hallowed ground. That's from the Ryman. That's the circle where the microphone was standing, and the greats over the years have stood right there. So you really do kind of pinch yourself and go, this is just too cool.
It's not huge, but it really is. You know, a circle of the floor that they took from the Ryman before they replaced the floor at the Ryman, and they took that and put it into the new building back in the 70s or whenever they built that. And, you know, it's all beat up. And here's the wildest thing. You know, back in 2010, we had this huge, huge flood in Nashville. And I hope I don't get cut off talking about all our tragedies here. So the funny thing is, they said that, and they came into the stage, you know, after all that happened, you know, the new theater there is right on the river. So it was completely flooded, just, you know, all the way through. And they said there was about a foot of water all across the whole stage. And when they took it off, all of the boards around the whole stage, I mean, it's a big stage, were just completely ruined and buckled and everything. But the circle was in perfect shape, and it's the same boards. They didn't have to fix them. They didn't have to do anything except dry them.
Gives me goosebumps.
And that's pretty spooky.
Yeah. That's because that night in 2010, we were live on the radio, and a trucker called us and said, I'm in Nashville, and I'm telling you, the Opry is flooded. And we started calling around, and everybody's sleeping.
Well, and we talked to Duane Eddy after that. And most of his guitars, even though they've been kind of refurbished and they've been given to museums and things, but they were unplayable.
Yeah, because of the water level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So many, because that's another thing, is that the places where everybody keeps their instruments, sound check and places where we rehearse and stuff were also on the river.
Yeah.
And so Vince Gill, I can't even tell you how many he lost, and, you know, just so many people's instruments were messed up. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think they were able to renovate a lot of them, but I know tons of people lost their stuff, and I'm lucky I live on a hill.
Words to live by. If you're moving to Nashville, live on a hill. Because really, weather in the past 25 years has just changed so dramatically there. I mean, it used to, Tennessee, we never have reports of the kind of, not just storms, but like catastrophic events.
Seems that within about the past 10, 15 years, Nashville has become sort of tornado alley, nasty weather alley.
It's like, if it's going to be bad, it's going to go there. Yeah.
It's kind of crazy, but, you know, it's funny because, you know, like I say, you know, if you were driving down the roads here now, you would be going, oh, my gosh, what happened here?
Yeah.
But so many people in other parts of the country just didn't realize how, you know, what a big event it was.
Yeah.
It was really huge. I mean, you know, we had an ice storm here. I think it was 94 or something like that, and it was pretty bad. But this one was, like, really crazy. And, you know, of course, we were in Florida. I started to tell that story, but so we went down there. We had planned to go down there and sort of decompress from everything and write with our friends. And all three of us had water situations happen at our home in Nashville while we were down there. And it didn't put a serious damper on things for us down there, you know, but, you know, we did have, you know, it wasn't like we could completely immerse ourselves in the creative thing where there was people to call and like,
because
turn off the water.
That's because you're human. That's why you reacted that way.
Susie, the blatant plug light has just gone on. So we should do some blatant plugs about you're going to be at the Grand Ole Opry this coming week for your first appearance as an Opry member, right?
That is correct. On Wednesday. I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I was trying to think, you know, what am I saying, you know, because I did all that. You know, whenever I go on, that I always feel like I need to do at least one or two hits. Now I get to go play on the Opry more often and stuff. Now I don't have to be so, I can be more, wild and free about what I'm going to sing. And, you know, of course I will do that because I think, you know, if people are coming into town to see the Opry, that you should give them something they might, you know, be attached to, you know. But I always, I always want to do that. You know, I leave my hits in my set because I truly, as a fan, I want my, you know, the people that brought me to the show, that when I go there, I want them to play me some of those hits that I remember.
Sure.
So I always do that. But it's kind of a wild experience now. I'm kind of like, I got the whole Opry band, and then my guys I bring with me, and the great singers they have out there, you know, so I can fill in with all those wild backgrounds and stuff like that. It's really fun.
Being an Opry member, is there a requirement that you perform X number of times in a given year?
You know, it's not, it's nothing written down. It's like kind of just, you know, I think that people that they choose to be in the opera, they know they enjoy being there.
Sure.
You know, I play there, you know, pretty often anyway. I definitely will pick that up now that I'm a member, and you kind of feel a little bit of, I don't want to say responsibility, but you feel like you, you know, it's your place, and so you want to show up and hang out with your buds and all the good stuff that comes along with that. It's not a required thing.
You talk about being able to do some new stuff. I have to ask you, are you working on any new songs, any new recordings coming up?
Well, I, you know, that was one of the things we were doing down in Florida. It was like my buddies, like all of us play instruments and we all sing and we all write. And so this is the first time in my whole life I've ever done a co-write with five other writers. That was pretty wild.
Mm-hmm.
But we wrote four new songs and we finished recording them. And then our friends, they now live down in Florida, full time. And so they are up here this week and we're kind of finishing up those four tunes. And Sunday night we're supposed to, or tomorrow night, I guess it is, we're supposed to have a, you know, like a band meeting and figure out how we're going to, you know, let these out into the world. But, you know, every single song is completely different from each other, you know, so it's not like, you know, like it has a big theme or anything like that, but you know, do you remember when, I mean, not to compare me to Dylan and you know, George Harrison and all those guys, but Tom Petty and all those guys did the Traveling Wilburys. We decided we were going to call ourselves the Traveling Wheelbarrows. But,
I actually like that.
Yeah,
it's similar.
But
we came up with an idea for a song, and then now we've changed our band name. So now we're called the Long Haulers.
Oh, I like that.
Between us, we've had over 80 years of marriage.
Yeah.
So, it's in the music business. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Well, that's
from what we know of you, you've always enjoyed stretching yourself musically, haven't you?
Yes, I have. You know, and I think that's one of the coolest things about collaborations is that you always learn something. You know, you always you know, you take you know, a little step outside of your comfort zone, and I think, you know, all of us kind of did that. I mean, Gretchen Peters is not known for co-writing, and I think we broke through, and like, I think she's going to be a co-writer now. So it's kind of fun to just sort of see how each one of us sort of, and Barry Walsh, you know, he's an amazing keyboard player, and you know, he's played with everybody from Waylon to the Four Tops, you know. So I mean, like every kind of style of music and accordion to boot.
Oh.
and you know, here he was writing lyrics for these songs. So it just was it was a really great experience to just sort of everybody just you know, because we've known each other for 30 some years, all of us, you know, that it was just like there just was no expectation, there was no pressure. It was just pure fun, and I think some real fun stuff came out of it. So
that's exciting.
I'm curious to see what people think.
Yeah, well, not only March 4th at the Opry, but you also have a night on the 24th for folks who are heading down to Nashville, the 24th of Opry. But we have listeners that want to make mention of the fact you will be in Illinois. You will be in Galesburg at the Orpheum on April 18th. Can I read a couple? I got to read a couple of these texts to you because they're wonderful, because you have so many fans here. This is from a listener who says, my dear lost friend, Stan Howe, the gifted music man from Montana, always said that Susie Boggess would sing more meaning into a song than it could be born with. Sing on, Susie.
That's so sweet.
That's a nice compliment. Oh, yes.
That is really nice.
this gentleman says, this is Mike in Gahanna. I think he told me a couple weeks ago, it's like when you sneeze. Ohio, an Evanston native, checking in. He says, in fact, he is a fan. I'm just scrolling through these texts. They're coming in at 312-981-7200. David from Nashville is also reporting, yes, he was without power for 8 days, and the rest of the world didn't seem to know that that was going on. He said, I met Susie several years ago at the Station Inn. She was sitting next to me and my gal at a show there. She chatted with us for about a half hour before the show started. She's just awesome.
And so,
yeah, she chats pretty good.
Yeah.
So many people, like this one from a 608 area code, are saying, Susie has such a beautiful singing voice.
Yes. And then someday soon, I mean, a lot of people are like me. It's in my top five of all-time favorite songs ever, and that was before I met you. And then when I met you, I was like, oh, golly, I can't believe this, because I love that song. In fact, Susie, I don't think I've ever asked you, do you recall when you first heard that song on the radio, you singing that song on the radio?
Me singing it. Gosh, I don't know if I remember that. I mean, I remember the first time I heard the song, and it was in my dorm room because my roommate, who was from Fox River Grove, she had a Judy Collins album, and she played that, and I had already had a real affinity for cowboys because I met Roy Rogers when I was in the sixth grade. So
you never told me that.
I did, yeah.
You happened to be talking to one of the world's biggest Roy Rogers fans.
Ever.
Oh, my gosh, Steve, I can't believe we've never talked about this. I mean, so my grandparents and my aunt and uncle lived on the three corners of the desert block in Apple Valley. And my grandparents moved out there when I was, I don't know, maybe eight, something like that. And so on spring break, when I turned 12, I got to take the train out from Galesburg. And, you know, my grandmother worked at the church auxiliary with Dale, and they were best friends, you know. Aww. And so I got to go over and I had TV dinners with them on the Wednesday night.
No.
Like spring break. I swear I did. I promise you. And I've got pictures. I've got pictures on my website somewhere. But
okay, now
I have to tell you.
You know, the Opry and everything. That's cool. But you knew Roy Rogers.
I did. And so here I am. I'm 12 years old, you know, and I got that girl haircut, and I'm in my bell bottoms and everything at their house. And I had to go back because I realized that, you know, Saturday I was going to be having to take the train back home, and I didn't have a photograph, and none of my friends were going to believe me.
Right.
So I went back over and I knocked on the door and I asked if I could take pictures, and Roy had broken his foot on his motorcycle, and he had nothing on it. He took his boot off and showed me his black foot. It was absolutely black. And I'm clipping a picture of him sitting in a rocking chair with his black foot with his boot off. And then I said to Dale, I said, I really want to get a picture with you. Can I please? And she said, well, let me put my wig and my girdle on and come back out. And sure enough, she went ahead and put her wig and her girdle on, and I have a darling picture of me and Dale.
What a sweet memory. Oh, my gosh.
I have to share with you one of the coolest pictures that I got several years ago. It's a copy of a picture that one of Les Paul's friends shared with us. It's a picture of Les Paul and Roy Rogers and some other people, and they're jamming together at Myrna Loy's house at a birthday party in the 1940s. And Les Paul, Roy Rogers, and
Myrna Loy.
And it's so cool.
Wow. I mean, isn't that so great, though? I mean, it's just like, you know, people are all characters, but just imagine that group of people sitting there picking together. That is just a riot.
No, I'm having a hard time imagining Roy's black foot.
It was nasty.
Oh, my gosh. Well, let me bring you back full circle, though, because I asked about Someday Soon. Yeah. When did you first hear yourself on the radio?
Well, I think the very first time I heard myself, I was driving up to Minneapolis from Illinois. I was living in Kewaunee at the time, and I was driving up to play at a little place called the Coffee House Extempore that was on the West Bank up there. And it was just a really folky place that all people would just donate their old Lazy Boys and their old chairs and stuff. Yeah. So it was a big hall full of just, you know, easy chairs. And it was a great place to play. But I was driving up there, and the time before that I was playing up there, I had gotten up really early, and I sat on the floor at the public radio station because I knew Garrison Keillor was doing the morning show. And so it's 6 o'clock in the morning, and I'm sitting there just thinking, he's got to go to the bathroom sometime, you know? So I've got my little album that I made, and I'm just sitting there waiting for him to have to go to the bathroom. And he never did come out, but Tom Keith, who was the guy who did all the sound effects on A Prairie Home Companion, he came out, and I gave him the album that I had made in a mop closet in Peoria. And so I was driving up there, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 months later, and somebody played Ghost Riders in the Sky, and it was 10 o'clock at night or something, and I'd just gotten close enough to Minneapolis for it to get into my car.
Yeah.
And I just me and my dog, so... You know, we were both celebrating, though.
Wow.
We were happy.
That's a great image, though.
I love that.
That's right out of a movie, driving along on a dark night and the glow of your radio, and that's you on the radio.
And you know what's so weird is, like, when you hear yourself on the radio, you hear something and you go, oh, I love that song. And then you go, oh, wait, that's me.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
No, wait.
That's wild. Well, we are so excited to catch up with you because, of course, you know we're fans. We love you to death, and we're just so happy for you. And I'll say
it. And when you get these new songs ready to be released, you have to come back on with us, and we'll do a release party on the air.
Or
I would love that. That would be so fun. Oh my gosh, I would love it. If you talk to my gal pals and my friends, they're just amazing. So maybe we can work it out. So,
yes, come to town.
I love them as much as I do, and I love you guys too. I mean, we just over the years we've just kind of become friends, and sometimes I get on here and I go, oh my gosh, don't forget that there's lots and lots of people listening.
Well, you have lots and lots of fans listening too, and I'm so happy we could spend some time with you tonight because we follow you religiously, and we're just so happy for you. Yeah.
Likewise.
Thank you so much, and have fun Wednesday, and I think this is a good excuse for you to go out and buy something really wonderful to wear on stage Wednesday night.
I was going to tell you, because I know you would appreciate this, but I didn't want to wear anything new for the Opry induction. I wanted everything to be so comfortable. So I wore, you know, like a 10-year-old dress and a 20-year-old pair of boots. And I mean, it was
Wait a minute. Don't undersell it. You wore a really cute red sweater dress that looked fabulous on you. And you were the only one in a dress on that stage, which I thought made you stand out, which is really cool, too.
I just wanted to feel comfortable. I was so scared I was going to get out. I bought something really fancy to wear, and then I put it on. I was just like, I don't feel like myself. And I was like, I'm just going to wear these old clothes because they make me feel like my old self. So that's what I did.
That's you. That's so you. Susie, thank you so much. We're here for you anytime you want to stop by and say hi. And we're going to be in Florida. You're going to be in Florida about 7 hours away from us. But if you drive by Panama City Beach, give us a holler.
Okay. We absolutely will. And if you're coming through Nashville, you know you've got a bed here.
So. Thank you.
All right.
Take care, hon.
We love you.
Love you, Susie.
Bye-bye now.
And Doug says to say hi.
Hey, Doug.
Hey, Doug.
Good night, Susie.
Okay. Bye-bye.
She is so special. Just
I'm so happy for her. I'll say it now that she's not on the line. It's about damn time she's in the opera.
Yeah. Yeah, that should have happened years ago.
Craziness. That's why when I got that text, I was like, oh, finally. Yeah. So anyway, I'm so glad we got to catch up with her because it's been a huge 6 months.
We should remind you that this is our last full show for a while because of March Madness. And we're going to sneak into March at midnight. Because of March Madness, we're going to have some shorter shows for a while. And starting next week, we are going to be taking you on the road with us. We're going to be coming to you from the studios of WKGC-FM high atop the Charles Hilton Center for Advanced Technology and Hospitality Management at Gulf Coast State College Panama City, Florida.
But that's the least we could do because they opened up the school to let us in to use their wonderful studio. And they turned the lights on in the whole building for us to come in on a Saturday night.
And next week, theoretically, we'll be starting around 10:30, depending on what happened, how mad the March Madness gets.
Yeah, because it's basketball. It could go into overtime. Who knows? But we will be on post-games throughout the month of March.
We got a lot more coming up. Yes, tonight is Tom Appel's night, so Tom and a whole bunch more. But well, let me start our shouts with an update from our blog. And we're constantly amazed at the number of people from different countries who are now checking out our blog. And we would love it if you would check out our blog. And you can go to stevehanjani.wordpress.com. We would love it if you would subscribe to it. There's no fee. We don't spam you. You just get an email anytime we do a new blog post. We had a lot of them this week. Some of the countries this week, United States, of course, Japan, Hong Kong, SAR, China, Canada, Singapore, Mexico, the United Kingdom, Puerto Rico, the Netherlands, and Germany.
Wow. No South Africa.
Not this week.
No Beijing.
Not this week.
So interesting. I want to hold you there on the blog for just a moment because we've had a couple of people say they wanted to comment on the blog. And the blog was set up for people who don't choose to be on Facebook. It gives you an opportunity to continue to stay up to date on what we're doing and to communicate with us. And both of them said that they wanted to comment, but they had to have a password to do that.
You shouldn't need a password.
You shouldn't.
I don't think you need a password. No.
I walked through it, and I didn't encounter that. And
by the way, if you're looking at our blog, it doesn't always make it obvious how you would comment. But if you want to comment, click on the individual post.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the most recent one is the February 28th WGN Radio Game Plan. You click on that. When that comes up, you scroll down to the bottom. And you will see some of the comments. And let's see, where is the place where it says you can comment? Yeah, just scroll down and it says leave a comment.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but if you have to, if it's asking for a password, you've clicked on something that is not necessary.
Okay, I'm just going to try testing here because I'm in a totally different account now.
Mm-hmm. This. Okay. Is just a test. If this were an actual emergency, we would tell you where to duck and cover. Okay. Right?
Give me 1 second, and I'm saying test. And then... it does say log in or provide your name and email to leave a comment.
That is kind of new.
I wonder if it is... Your email address would never be made public.
Right. And we don't have it if you make a comment. We don't have access to it.
So let me see if I just say... Da, 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 da.
Because one of our listeners said it kept asking for her password, and she said, but I don't have a WordPress account.
No, you don't need... Okay.
So I think it went through some changes, just like Facebook has been doing.
Let me see. Now, I just said him... And I'm the only one who would see this because I approve the comments.
Mm-hmm.
And that's interesting. It does indicate that it wants either an an email or a website. Okay, can I click on comment? No, well, let me click on. So I guess you do need an email.
But again, no one else is going to have access to that email. And that is a new wrinkle in it, because before, I know we've never had to jump through hoops before.
Okay, I'm going to try something here. Let me see. Give me 1 second.
By the way, the shout-outs will be coming up in just a moment. As Steve is experimenting.
How's that saying go? You don't get this kind of radio up and down the dial?
Amen to that.
Okay. Now, I put in, because I have a private email here at the station.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as soon as I put up the email, then it says comment, and I'm doing, and it let me do the comment. Okay.
But if you read and you don't comment, we still know where you are coming in from. That's how we know the different countries that are accessing the blog.
It's just somehow it says, this came from this place, this came from that place. But so you didn't need to supply a password.
Right.
But apparently you do need to supply an email.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Johnny and I are the only two, because for those of you who don't know, nobody else handles our social media.
Right.
We control our Facebook, our Blue Sky, you name it. We're the only ones that control that.
When we're on the air, we're also the ones, along with Julian, looking at the texts that are coming in. Because some people will say, please tell Steve and Johnny, or ask Johnny this. Well, it's right here in front of me.
Yeah.
So we know you're out there, and we're not going to abuse any information that comes our way, like your phone number or whatever. And by the way, our number is 312-981-7200.
Okay, we are going to get to the shouts, but just a little postscript to the posting on the blog. Okay, so what have we learned, boys and girls? We have learned that you do not need a password.
Right.
Now, you do need to put some name, because I'm looking right now at the comment that I made, and it says him, because that's what I put in, and it has the email that, let me see, it doesn't even show the email. Okay. But it says him, and I said test, and that's all it was. But then what I'm seeing, it says your comment is awaiting moderation.
And you're the moderator.
This is a preview. Your comment will be visible after it has been approved. So you do need to give some email address, mm-hmm. but the email doesn't show up here.
Mm-hmm.
You need to give some name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You do not need to give a password, and we're the only people that see it.
So feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Go ahead. If you got something to say, you can say it there if you're not on Facebook. Yeah. All right. A bunch of people have checked in at 312-981-7200 and on our Facebook page, where every week we give you a rundown of what's coming up on the show, and we ask you to tell us where you're going to be listening from. Officer Dennis is working in Northwest Indiana tonight, so
hey,
shout out to him. He's keeping the bad guys in their place. Because that's what he does.
Yeah.
Sherry and Bob are in Arlington Heights. Sherry Hanrahan is in Romeoville. George Clements is listening tonight in Augusta, Georgia. Our buddy Kathy Bassett checked in tonight. Squirrel Lovers Club, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Debbie Tusick is a regular, and Debbie's got a birthday coming up on Wednesday, March 4th, when Susie's going to be performing at the Grand Ole Opry. Debbie's going to be celebrating, so happy early birthday, Debbie Tusick.
In fact, speaking of Debbie, she also posted on our blog, and she said, good evening, lucky people go to Florida. Enjoy your stay. Can't wait for great pictures. Tonight I will be listening on my phone from Sandwich.
Sandwich. Janet R. is in Pittsburgh. Mike K. is in Ohio. Doug Youngren is in Sarasota. Another Mike, and this one's in Akron, Ohio. David's in Nashville. Mike in Elmwood Park. David Shine, high atop the mount in Prospect. Bing Besh is in Winfield. Sherry is in Bolingbrook. JP is in Peoria. Rob and Amy are tuned in from Whiting, Indiana. Ray is in Grand Ridge. Robin's in Dyer. Bonnie and George enjoyed 90 degrees in Scottsdale today. Yee! Pam Crump.
Where was it? We were listening to the Sox game.
Oh,
and
yes.
It was like 92 in Arizona
and they
yesterday.
Said it was uncomfortable because it just happened. It was 60 and then it was 90s and they were winning. Yay. Yeah. They won.
Sox have a good record.
Yeah. And it's not like they're just winning with a couple of runs. They're really racking up the runs, which is exciting.
I'm pumped about this season for the Sox.
Pam Crombie checked in on our Facebook page, and we opened the show tonight talking about our friend and former engineer, Aubrey Mumpower. Mm-hmm. Well, Pam has shared video of Aubrey skiing.
It's a wonderful video.
Steve, did you see the video of him before he had silver hair? He was a hippie, but she put up a black and white video that goes back a ways, and it's really cool. So thank you so much, Pam, for posting those videos for us tonight. We've never seen those. Loopy Aylman is listening. He saw Susie Boggess in 1988 in Okinawa, Japan. She was part of a USO show featuring Ricky Skaggs in 88.
Hmm.
And Lupe was in the Marine Corps.
What was the thing that I came across? Speaking of Ricky Skaggs.
Hmm.
Remember, I showed you, I stumbled on this earlier this week. It was Ricky, and it was like a rock jam. Ricky and about three
was
or four
Vince
other
Gill?
People. I think Vince Gill, I want to say.
Because Vince is an eagle, too, you know.
Yeah, but this wasn't just country performers. This was some rock guys.
Well, let me continue because I got a lot of names. And
okay.
When you think of it, you've got 3 hours to shout it out.
Continue.
Okay. All right. Bobby Danos, our buddy, also in Sammich, Illinois. Thank you, Bobby, for checking in tonight. Eric Baum in Wells Beach, Maine. And he says, tonight's picture is from the Nor'easter from Monday, whenever everything was shut down due to the blowing snow and 65-mile-an-hour winds. You know, we were talking with Susie about the horrible storms that had just devastated Nashville and knocked out the power for literally for weeks. The storm on the East Coast was mind-boggling. But I got to tell you, there was a point when they were showing video from Central Park. I so wanted to be there. It was so cool.
It looked kind of cool.
They were just enjoying being together in the snow. And I thought, and it was clean. And there was no graffiti on the snow and no dog poop. And it was all wonderful. Because I was in Chicago looking at it, not there. Janet Gellert's in Gainesville, Florida. And she says, I'll be listening on my phone where it's nice and warm again. Yep. South Florida's had some really weird cold weather. Peter Lawrence sends us a picture of his cat, Buddy. You guys, you're so great. Rhonda Roger. sorry you won't be.
That's a great picture.
Rhonda Rogers says, sorry you won't be heading north for a while. Love your photos on your drive into the studio. Yeah, but the photos with palm trees are not bad.
Yeah.
It's just that it's dark because, we get the time change.
Our very first week down there will be the time change. It won't impact our show.
Right, but we'll start getting dusky pictures as we're driving into work.
But I like the pictures of the pretty blue lights on the Hathaway Bridge as we're crossing the bridge.
Yes. But I love the fact people will actually post under the pictures. Not the same as Chicago.
What? No, you think?
It's not the same. Gene Jacobson is listening in Milwaukee. Beverly Goodall's in Highwood. Pat Alberts is tuned in. She's a regular listener. Tracy Douglas is in Savannah, Georgia. Enrique Gallegos says, please play some music from Neil Sedaka. Enrique, we're going to do that.
We're going to do that.
It's
absolutely
on our list of things to do tonight.
Yep.
Joan Bloom is in Greenville, South Carolina. Donna Youngheim is in Oaklawn. Carl Stevens is listening in Northville, Michigan. Kathy Abnor is tuned in. Love Susie, too. Hope to see her in Galesburg in April. John Gautier is in Warren, Michigan. Pam Schroeder's in Punta Gorda, Florida. And let's see, some folks here say, Patricia Heumann is in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Karen Rosenkrantz is in Grays Lake. Sally Gunther Green is in Palatine. Susie Schimmel is tuned in. And will you be able to? Will we be able to hear you when you broadcast from Florida? Yeah,
yeah.
That's the point.
We go into a studio down there at WKGC,
mm-hmm.
and that is magically transported to the WGN radio yep. studio. So we're really working with two teams of engineers, the team of engineers here at WGN and the team of engineers down at WKGC.
And producer Julian here and producer yeah. Becca down in Florida.
And you won't notice anything different?
No.
It will sound the same, other than we ain't here.
And we're just really, really lucky that we have that facility that we can broadcast yeah. from. And I'm not kidding when I tell you, it's a big college. They opened the school up for us on Saturday nights. They turn the lights on. They turn the heat on or the AC so that we're comfortable yeah. in there. It's really amazing that they do that for us.
Yeah, and we've been consulting this radio station. When we initially stopped doing full-time at WGN, one of the many things we started doing along with book writing was consulting some radio stations. And this radio station is one of the radio stations we consult, and that's how we wound up being able to broadcast when we're down in Florida.
Mm-hmm. Steve Brower is in Grant Park, from the village of Grant Park. Oh, interesting. I don't think Steve has checked in, and I'm not sure I'm familiar with the village of Grant Park. Ron Anderson is in Louisville, Barb Larkin in South Milwaukee, Lynn Kinzer's in San Antonio, Florida, Kim Sack is in Southwest Michigan, Mark Goldstein is in Owings Mills, Maryland.
Mm-hmm. Home of Motor Week, and our friend John Davis.
Nancy Witt is in Milwaukee, Jill McCarron is tuned in. You will be back on GN, right? Yeah, Jill?
Yeah.
Unless you know something we don't know.
Who knows? Stuff happens.
Ellen.
But again, that's one of the reasons why you want to follow us on our yes. blog and all our social media places.
So if stuff happens, you know where to find us.
Yep.
Helen Thomas is in Kenosha. Carrie Hunt's in Ruskin, Florida. Vicki Hagstutz is in the southernmost point in the United States. And that's all we know, the southernmost point. Margaret Diane.
Where would the southernmost point?
Okay. You got me.
Would that be
Remember,
the Florida Keys, or are we talking Hawaii?
I don't know.
If you're speaking south.
Stop. I don't know.
The Hawaiian Islands would technically be
no,
the southernmost.
You're flaunting. You're flaunting.
What am I flaunting?
Ignorance. I'm sorry. Margaret Diane Durkin Reynolds is listening, a longtime listener. That's a mouthful, too, that name. Michelle Fairfield's in Peoria. Lord Moncrief is in Ottawa. Louise Palish is tuned in. Also, a fan of Neil Sedaka, so stick around with us, Louise. John Goodlow is listening. Al Siegert is in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. Mary Gold in Tinley Park. Brian Lefevre, whew, I'm glad Brian checked in. He's in Chicago, in Bridgeport.
Yeah.
Finally, we got somebody local. Christian Moberg is in McCoy, Wisconsin. Nancy Hollins in Northbrook. Debbie Hardiman in Waukesha. Bonnie Pearson's in Grays Lake. Sharon Malone is in K-Town. Margot Moore is in Albuquerque. Patty Barron is in Wisconsin. Dave Masterson. Dave Kremnitzer is in Dallas. Mark Schroeder in Neenah, Wisconsin. Louise Bigos is tuned in, also a Neil Sedaka fan. Ellen Aslison is in Sandwich. Sandy Petty is in Florida. No, she wants to know if we're going to Florida. Yes, we are. Susan Altman is listening and sends us a picture of her little pup. Oh, beautiful. Roy Phillips is in Northwest Illinois. Larry Mann's in Florida. Chuck Snitchler. We get to Chuck. He's the best friend of this here radio station. He's in Valpo now.
And I want to add one more from our blog, Robin Banks. They said, listening just south of the Trollway in Mount Horeb, Wisconsin via the WGN app and eventually a Sea Crane pillow speaker. One of the many sad events of this past week, the loss of Neil Sedaka. And I will never forget in the 70s when Neil Sedaka's second version of Breaking Up Is Hard to Do came mm-hmm. out. For those of you not familiar, about the time that people were starting to write him off and say, well, you know, so much for that. He does this wonderful revisiting of Breaking Up Is Hard to Do, and that was on an album that was produced on Elton John's Rocket Records label.
Right. It was a big turning point for him.
And all of a sudden, people were saying, whoa, we got ourselves an artist here. I mean, he'd always been an artist.
Yeah.
And I will never forget one of the things, I had the very good fortune of interviewing Neil when I was at the Once Big 89 and then years later at WIND. And he told me the story of the original version of Breaking Up Is Hard to Do. He said the producers and the recording engineers didn't know what the heck he was doing because he was doing it old school, kind of like Les did.
Mm-hmm.
And the comma, comma, down, doobie, doo, down, da. That's what he did first.
First.
Because he did all those harmonies himself.
Oh, my gosh.
And the engineers and everybody said, What is all this comma, comma, down, doobie, doo, down, da? And he did that, and then he did the
that
harmony,
the
comma,
first
comma
layer.
Down, doobie, doo, down, da. He did all of that stuff.
Wow.
Then
he would sing the harmony, and then he would sing his lead?
He did his lead last.
Wow.
Just like Les did. It was the same kind of thing.
But I'm thinking of that song. I'm thinking, how does your mind work that way?
If you listen to that, I mean, he was almost doing a kind of a Mary Ford thing because he does the initial harmony, then he lays down the harmony, then some more harmony, then some more harmony,
yeah.
And then the lead vocal over
so
that.
So it's multi-part harmony, really.
And Neil was a classical trained musician. But what a nice man.
I bet.
I'm looking at the Neil Sedaka website, and there is a message. Says, our family is devastated by the sudden passing of our beloved husband, father, and grandfather, Neil Sedaka, a true rock and roll legend, an inspiration to millions, but most importantly, at least to those of us who were lucky enough to know him, an incredible human being who will be deeply missed.
And the videos that he's been posting in recent months of him singing with his grandson.
Oh, wonderful stuff.
Because it's just pure joy. It's just so, and his grandson's got a good voice, but you could just tell he's so into it. He's sitting there at the piano with his grandpa, and they're just so cool. Neil was 86 years old when he passed, so literally millions of records worldwide, and his career goes back to 1955, and a lot of people don't realize this, and not all bios of Neil mentioned this last week, but he started out with a group called The Tokens.
Sure, as in The Lion Sleeps Tonight.
The Lion Sleeps Tonight, 1955. Yeah. So he's been working for six decades.
Sure.
Regularly.
Yeah.
Did I read where he's written like 500 songs?
I think that's probably at least.
One of my favorite Neil Sedaka memories is just recently. I follow a guy in New York who walks up to people on the street and says, hi, where do you live? He's got a cameraman with him, and they'll say, oh, I live there in that apartment. Well, can I come take a tour of your apartment? And he toured Neil Sedaka's place.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so much fun because it was like a time capsule from the 70s. There was shag carpeting and there were big velvet pillows and it was great. And he was just a nice man.
He really was.
And so many people said when he sang, it really was just joy. Even though he wrote songs like Solitaire and I knew that song as an Andy Williams song because it was my mother's favorite song. If not her favorite, it was their top five favorite songs. And then, of course, Elvis did the song. But I did not realize that Neil Sedaka wrote it for Elvis.
Mm-hmm.
Solitaire.
Yeah.
That's a powerful song.
Absolutely.
And I remember as a kid, to me, it was kind of a sad, wasn't poppy like, you know, Neil Sedaka should be.
And a lot of people in the 70s, along with this comeback, the Captain and Tennille,
yes,
when they did Love Will Keep Us Together, which was written by Neil Sedaka, and a lot of people thought, oh, wow, that's cool. Do a search at some point. One of my favorite shows back during the 60s was a show called Shindig. It was an ABC TV Wednesday night show hosted by Jimmy O'Neill. And on this one show, they had Neil Sedaka and Jerry Lee Lewis.
Oh.
And I'm trying to think who the other, it was another piano player. And they had because they did weird staging things.
Mm-hmm.
So they closed out the song, out the show, with three pianos on top of each other. Neil is playing one, Jerry Lee is playing one, and I forget who played the other one. And they're all singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
That's weird.
It was just a... But it was a hoot.
Yeah. Wow.
But Neil, you know what? I was confusing that with a different show where it was Jerry Lee and Fats Domino and Little Richard and some other people. But that was just the two of them on Shindig.
What a weird combo.
Yeah, really. Neil had a huge resurrection in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while... Because really, if you go back to the 60s, people had kind of thought, well, you know, that's it.
It was pop music. Yeah. Move on.
But boy, he came back in the 70s with so many hit records. And that was one of the fascinating things, that he didn't just have an occasional hit. I mean, he was dominating the charts and selling not just singles but albums for a long time. And he was... He was showing a different side of himself, too.
And writing songs for people and appearing with them. A listener pointed out that apparently he's on the end of the Captain and Tennille's Love Will Keep Us Together. He played piano. I didn't know this. He played piano on Dream Lover with Bobby Darin. I didn't know that he wrote Bad Blood for Elton John when he joined that label in the early 70s. I'm like, oh, what? I knew he'd written hundreds of songs, but then I started... Elvis and Elton John and Bobby Darin and Connie Francis, and I'm like, whoa.
And when he was in the 70s, he was showing a different side of himself. And one of my favorite Neil Sedaka songs, this is a song, he didn't write this song, but he heard about it, he loved it. John Lennon was having all kinds of problems. He was trying to immigrate into the United States, and there was all kinds of problems with his passport and visa and stuff like that. And Neil wanted to record something that would address that. And
he was a child of immigrants, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so interesting that out of the hundreds of songs that he wrote, and that one just kind of...
Well, now, he didn't write that one.
I know.
But he recorded it. Yeah.
That's what I find fascinating, that one spoke to him to the extent that he recorded it. And on Facebook, after his passing, a lot of people pointed out that they weren't crazy about his poppy, you know, finger-snapping music. But when they heard the Immigrant Song, it was like, whoa, this is fascinating.
And we're dipping into some songs that were maybe not his biggest hit records, but songs that show another side of Neil Sedaka. One of my absolute favorites that wasn't one of his highest charting records, a song that he wrote and performed with his daughter, Dara. You can search and you will find some videos of Neil and Dara performing that. I believe it was over in London.
Mm-hmm.
Just some wonderful, wonderful stuff.
He had two children, a Dara and a son. And that her voice with his is just is magical.
Mm. Yeah. There are so many things. Oh, Carol. That was one of his first hit records.
Yes, yes.
Back in the days when he was working at the Brill Building in New York.
Because, but he had history with Carole King because they were high school sweethearts, and was apparently inspired by his relationship with Carole King. And let me say, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame announced their nominees. It's a travesty that this man is not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He's in the Songwriters Hall of Fame.
Yep.
It's just wrong, and they've got to right that wrong.
They really do. And again, Neil, the early part of his career, he was known for poppy sing-along stuff. Serious stuff didn't come, the more serious, more adult music didn't come till the 70s.
But he still sold millions of records.
He belongs in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
And on that note, rabbit, 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 dang it, it's already March 1st.
Let's turn our attention to Tom Appel, the publisher of Consumer Guide. And hi, Tom.
Hi.
Lots of things to be talking about tonight.
Ooh-wee.
Oh, boy.
Should we start with that story that you came across and shared with me earlier today, the J.D. Powers over-the-air software update story?
Yeah, it's kind of a funny story, but it's interesting, too. J.D. Powers just released a new study, and I don't know if they've released much of it, but there was a teaser press release that went out. And one of the interesting things that they determined is that the owners of late-model cars, cars that are subject to periodic software, over-the-air software updates, find them annoying, but maybe not for the reasons you think that they're annoying. What they dislike primarily is the fact that the car will do some sort of update, and it'll happen while they're not driving, you know, while they're in the garage, whatever. Update takes place, and then drivers, owners, never know what the update was for. They start the car, nothing is different. So they feel a little cheated, like they want things to look different or sound different, or they want an email or a text telling them what that update included. So the frustration is not with the update specifically, but with the update seeming random and unnecessary.
So do you think that it kind of makes people assume that something is going to go wrong because they've had an update? Because I know I do that with a computer. If there's been an update, I'm like, okay, buckle up. The next few days are going to be difficult. It's never good.
No, and when my iPhone updates, there's usually some obnoxious font change on some stuff. Yeah, or for some reason, when I dial a number, the numbers move around in like a bubble. Like what? I don't know what that's about.
Or the font.
It's not making my experience better.
No, the other day I had an update on my phone, my Android phone, and my font was different. I'm like, no, I didn't do that.
But again, sometimes you need to dig into the details. I know with the over-the-air updates that we've had with our most recent car, anytime we get an over-the-air update, we can click and see, okay, here is what this update included. And it will say specifically, okay, yada, 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 this is tweaking your sound, this is tweaking your video, this is tweaking whatever. So I don't know if it is the case with all cars, but at least with ours, and I would assume that most people would do this, just kind of click through the menu, and there is a place where you can see, here's what this update included.
You're asking too much, Steve. Seriously, Tom, I know you do this too. I follow a couple of car groups on social media.
Yeah.
And the things that people post, I'm like, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah.
When you ask, a person actually had a picture of their dash the other day.
Yeah.
And on the upper left corner, there was a red light that was apparently flashing on their dash. And they take the time to go online to say, what does this mean? It's a little late now. That was a red thing telling you that you have some obstruction in your way.
Yeah.
And I'm like, really? I don't read the manual because I have Steve to do that for me. But you think you would go to your manual before you would take it out to the public to flaunt your ignorance?
Well, you would think you would, A, read your manual, which is my choice.
Thing.
B, do a Google search.
Yes.
What does this mean? Even do a screenshot and put it in and say, what is this? Tell me what this thing is. But now we have had with some of the update, there was one in particular where we had an update and all of a sudden, what are you doing? Are you refiling? Are you building your house while you're talking to us?
Oh, I was trying to find out if my microphone was plugged in, so I'm pulling the cord, and there's 17 yards of cord, so it's all very confusing.
That's so funny, because we can hear that better. We can hear you.
Yeah.
I can't. I've got headphones on. I can't hear that, so it's all very startling
so
to me that you could.
Yeah.
But you should be able to look and see there's a setting, and it should say, what is connected to your laptop, and it should be connected to your Blue Yeti microphone.
Let's just go to social media and post it and find out if someone can help us.
There was an update that we got, and after we got the update, all of a sudden we would no longer get red light camera notification.
Right.
So, and I'm, you know, we kind of like that. And we told the dealership about it. They didn't know how to solve it. we wound up having to get a phone number for the manufacturer. We called the manufacturer's phone number, and they were so helpful.
Yeah, they said it was a glitch.
They said it was a glitch. I said, just, okay, we will tell us where you are. We will send you. They needed our VIN number. And they said, okay, we're going to send you a new update. They sent the new update, solved the problem.
What do you think the point of the J.D. Power piece on over-the-air software updates was? Are they saying that if you feel that this is unnecessary, that you're like the rest of the world? Or what was the gist of it, in your opinion?
Broadly, what they're tracking down is that the single most frustrating thing for new car owners has to do with the touchscreen and the infotainment systems.
Oh, okay.
And the software is inconsistent between vehicles and that it's sometimes glitchy. And one of the biggest problems, and I think a lot of people know this, is keeping your phone Bluetooth connected to your car is difficult. And these are the things that have said, it's not like cars breaking down. It's mm-hmm. not like,
right.
you know, engine smoothest. It's not about cabin quietness. It's about this electronic stuff and connectivity. And it's been very frustrating. And you'd think that we're into this age now by a solid decade, mm-hmm. 12, 15 years. And still there's some troubles with it. And part of the problem is that everything keeps changing too, right? We're, we're using CarPlay and Android Auto and competing mm-hmm. systems. And some manufacturers want to get away from that. And there's just a lot of stuff in play. But consumers are frustrated ultimately by the lack of simplicity in these systems.
Hmm.
And that's kind of a two-sided coin because on one hand, everybody wants instant access, instant gratification. Okay, well, that means you're going to get a lot of updates. But along with those updates, you're going to get some glitches every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
We had a thing happen yesterday. I took Johnny to an appointment, and it was just going to be a quick appointment, so I'm waiting in the car. And while I was sitting in the car, I didn't even have my phone on, because I know my phone is connected through the car. At some point, I wanted to take a picture of something, so I pick up the phone, and the phone was hot. And I thought, well, mm-hmm. I haven't been using this. Why is it hot? Because it is constantly communicating with the car once I get into the car.
Hmm.
So.
Yeah, and that's been a complaint as of late, too, with newer phones and newer cars, that the phones are heating up and perhaps there's more communication. The contact pace. Also, chargers, if you put your phone in a charger in the car, those are faster than they used to be. So mm-hmm. there's more energy being moved back and forth as well.
Hmm. Okay, serious stuff. Ford recalls 4.4 million vehicles over faulty software. I guess it's going to be news when we have a week and we don't have a Ford recall, right?
Well, starting out of the chute, we're still pretty early in 2026, but 4.4 million probably puts them on top of the recall list for the year already. This is a big recall. It affects mostly their big trucks, primarily the F-150, F-250, and F-350. This is an interesting thing that will not affect people who do not tow,
mm-hmm.
but the towing control module isn't communicating all the time with the actual car, with the vehicle itself. This is a problem because that module is what inputs for the lights on the trailer and the brakes on the trailer respond to.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a really big deal if this breaks on people. So it's a pretty straightforward fix. I think it's just a software fix, actually, but it's going to affect a lot of vehicles. It'll be a quick fix, though. And word goes out March 17th.
Wow, March 17th. Because I'm reading here, the federal regulator said that inoperable trailer lighting and trailer braking functions can reduce the driver's ability to control an attached trailer and make the attached trailer less visible to other drivers, increasing the risk of a crash.
One of the problems is that I don't know how many people know this who don't tow, but many trailers after over a certain weight have their own built-in brakes. So, and you control those via this control module. So it's really important that this work.
Huh. It also indicates that owners can take your vehicle to a Ford or Lincoln dealer. You don't have to wait. They're going to fix it for free, but you don't have to wait until you get the warning. The official information coming to you in mid-March.
Yeah, it's a single part, and this should be pretty easy for them to mm-hmm. fix.
Can I stay with Ford for a second?
Sure.
Earlier this week, I sent Tom a story that I couldn't believe. Now, this has to do with the Ford electric vehicles, like the Ford Mustang Mach-E. Now, in the electric vehicles, because you don't have an engine, under the hood you have this space that some people call a frunk.
Mm-hmm. Okay. As in front trunk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But now, apparently, in its wisdom, Ford has decided to charge $495 if you want to use that space. What's the deal with this, Tom?
It's all very irritating, and I think Ford handled this badly. Because the actual story here isn't quite as evil as it sounds. Last year, Ford moved to a heat pump system. This is a way of heating the vehicle using energy and heat generated by the vehicle itself, as opposed to creating heat using electricity, which is really bad for battery range. The heat pump ended up taking up more space under the hood than they had hoped, shrinking the size of the frunk, the actual space, from about 6.5 feet to about 2.5 feet. So it's considerably smaller now, but still a handy thing if you wanted to throw a briefcase up there or something mm-hmm. like that. What Ford has chosen to do, because it is now smaller, is not put in the piece that they need to that actually contains the frunk. If you were to open the hood, which you could still do, you're just going to see a bunch of wires and stuff like that. It's not very interesting. But if you want to pay $495, you can get your frunk back.
Excuse me, this is a family show.
You get your frunk back.
I do hate that word, actually.
It's...
I'm going to say it wrong someday, and you're going to have to red button me.
I know.
It's right up there with the word dump, frunk. Yeah. Frunk.
I mean, you're very close to the day that Johnny was doing the commercial for the shoe fitters.
So what if I called them the foo? And I did.
And so what if we woke up Sunday morning to hear Wally Phillips replaying this over and over again?
I literally saw my whole career pass before my eyes. I'm laying in bed going, no, it's Sunday morning. And I said, I was mortified. The professional foo blankers. Mm-hmm. But I said it. And then I realized what I said when I looked up and everybody was laughing hysterically. I was like, oh, no. I'm going to be jobless. Now that's going to stick in your mind. But frunk is just a weird word. And then the picture that they've got with somebody with a frunk full of shrimp.
What is this?
What's that?
In this, and we should try to post this picture. But it looks like someone has filled their Ford Mustang Mach-E frunk with shrimp.
They did. That really
so
happened.
Weird.
That's a real picture.
What?
Really?
You know what this stemmed from? You might remember the Ram 1500 started to get Ram boxes, and they were storage things in the side rails of the truck, and they were pretty big, and they sort of promoted them by showing up places with those full of Red Bull or Schlitz Light or something on ice, and that became a thing. So for some reason, Ford thought they could do better and put this highly perishable
shrimp
seafood under the hood of a Mach-E.
Weird.
The blatant plug light has just started flashing, so tell us about this Consumer Guide place, and where is it, and what will we find there?
Yeah, Consumer Guide Automotive, been around since 1967. I joined the team way back in 2002. We've been reviewing cars that whole time. You can check out our reviews at consumerguide.com. I've got 3 reviews in a row. 2 of them are up now. One of them goes up late tomorrow night, of 3-row crossovers. Very popular right now with families, and they're all really good. I drove the Chevrolet Equinox, the Lexus TX, and... the Hyundai Palisade, which is completely redesigned for 2026 and now in hybrid form.
Did you actually try to get into that third row?
I did. I'm a big guy and I'm a clumsy guy, so it's not the easiest trip for me. But anyone a little bit healthier than me is probably going to do okay in all 3 cases. Those are pretty generously sized 3-row.
So I can get in, I just can't get out gracefully. You know, it's
hard. Yeah, I always end up on my knees.
Yeah. So, like, I can step in. I'm like, oh, well, this is good. Okay, great. And then when it's time to get out, I'm like, no, I'll just stay here.
But now, how?
Yeah, you want the kids back there,
right?
Do any of them have the seats that kind of pop forward so it is actually easier for you to get into that third row?
They eject you.
Yeah, there's kind of the ejector ones that slide forward, but also pivot kind of on the front of the seat, mm-hmm. and then the ones that simply slide forward, and then the back, the seat back kind of tilts forward, creating more or less the same amount of space. Mm-hmm. The space is a little narrow, I think, for adults in every single case. You can put adults back there. You want to stick the 17-year-olds back there. They're still bendable.
Okay.
Yes.
Also, Car Stuff Podcast.
Interesting podcast this week. Thanks. New shows drop every Tuesday morning. This week we talked to Zach Prattle. He's a guy who hosts a show on YouTube called Shooting Cars. He's just back from Japan, where he was driving their K cars. And for people who don't know, it was suggested by the current administration that Americans should consider legalizing K cars for distribution in the U.S. because they are so small and so affordable and so easy on the gas. And while those three things are true about K cars, there's a whole bunch of reasons why they wouldn't work here in the U.S., including the fact that they're not really safety tested for our streets. But it's a really good conversation.
Are they so small that they could, like, fall in a pothole? And I mean, I don't know what they look like.
K cars, mostly built by Suzuki and Daihatsu over mm-hmm. in Japan. And these are tiny cars, smaller than the Smart 4.2 that we Ooh. Used to have here.
Yeah.
And they enjoy all sorts of tax benefits in Japan because the streets are so crowded there and there's mm-hmm. no parking, especially in big cities like Kyoto or Tokyo. So the draw for these cars is very different than it is here in the U.S., though they are more affordable.
Did you see the video? And it must have been a K car because it was from Japan. The driver wanted to park in a parking place that was just too small. So what he was able to do was turn the vehicle around so that the back bumper was on the curb.
Yeah.
So he actually fit in this teeny tiny space, and the car was not so long that it stuck out past the car in front and behind him.
Yeah.
He was able to squeeze in that way.
There were people who tried to park their smart cars in the U.S. that yeah. way, where they were perpendicular to traffic.
Yeah.
And I don't know how police responded in different areas to that. It almost worked. I mean, they were so short, it almost worked. But
it's a good getaway car. Just think of it. Of course, once you
yeah,
get
you
try when you try to get away, you can't get up to speed. So I guess maybe not a good getaway car.
Also, don't forget you can follow Tom on Blue Sky at Car Guy
yeah.
Tom and Blue Sky. So what you driving?
I am currently driving the Chevrolet Traverse High Country all-wheel drive. And for people who don't know, this is Chevy's big three-row crossover. High Country is the top trim level in terms of luxurious appointments. And for 2026, they got rid of the V6 engine and replaced it with a turbocharged 4. And this vehicle presents really well. The interior is very nice. It's very quiet. It rides and handles well. In terms of character, it's a little bit anonymous, but I think as a family car, it's very good. It does get a little expensive for something called Chevrolet. The vehicle I'm driving is about $60,000 with all-wheel drive. But I do like it a lot. The power is good. I'm seeing 22 miles per gallon, which is very nice. Very roomy. Very nicely appointed inside. You can find some stuff that's not that nice in the interior, but I mean, for the most part, this feels like a luxury vehicle for Chevy money. Well, a lot of Chevy money.
A lot. Yeah, I'm still stunned at 60.
Yeah, it's a bunch of money. You can do one much cheaper. They start around 48.
Yeah, that's much cheaper. You're right. you had a picture of it. I'm sorry, I'm trying to find it on your page of a car that really was just eye-popping. This would have been last week. Do you recall what you were testing last week?
Was that the Hyundai Palisade?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So the Hyundai Palisade and the Kia Telluride, those are very similar vehicles. They both come from parent company Hyundai, are large crossovers, large three-row crossovers that have been incredibly popular. In fact, so popular that they've been constricted by Hyundai's ability to produce these things. So the Hyundai, which always had striking design, has been redesigned for 2026. Very angular, very clean, really interesting use of LED lighting.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great car. The car I drove, was called Cast Iron Brown.
That's
that was
it.
The color.
And
that is the worst name for a color.
It is. I mean, it's brown, but cast iron makes you think it's gray, and both of them combined are not really...
It's an odd color. And while I'm a fan of a lot of things Hyundai is doing, just personal taste, I don't care for the front headlights.
Oh, see, I like the front headlights. That's what got my attention. I thought that was really cool.
It's very aggressive. Hyundai's styling has been very aggressive, and it's very angular, and they use lighting a lot. Even when your headlights are off, there's lighting all over the place in the grill. And I guess it's kind of a love it or hate it thing, but it is striking.
Cast iron brown. Did you happen to see if they have any other wacky color names for 26?
You know what? I didn't go through the colors. I should do that to see what else they have. Hopefully they have a very nice red, just something more conventional.
Like red, right?
Yeah, red.
Not like first blush when you're 16 years old and you've had your first kiss red.
Right, because that's not going to fit on the title.
That's right.
But I find it interesting that the Hyundai and the Palisade in particular, it's becoming a little more upscale at a time when Genesis, which is also part of Hyundai Corporation, is separating itself even more from Hyundai vehicles.
It is interesting, and I have this theory, and I've been talking about it on the podcast a lot, that conventional mainstream makers are chasing upscale makers upstream. And Genesis is interesting because Genesis was so value-oriented until very recently. Mm-hmm. I think they're still a good deal, but I wouldn't call them bargains anymore. But I think that they're really driving other makers further upmarket and away from volume sales. Mercedes-Benz, for example, has had a lousy couple of years selling cars, and I think part of that is because mainstream cars are so nice now, and there are brands like Genesis out there as well. And I think that a lot of people are less brand loyal than they used to be.
Let me stick for a second with SUVs. What's the deal with this GM recall with GM's 10-speed SUVs?
Yeah, General Motors makes a big 10-speed automatic. It's been very well received for its performance. And interestingly, they co-developed it with Ford, but we haven't heard anything from Ford about this yet. But the transmission has a valve issue. And what's happening is that the valve is wearing prematurely and fluid is getting everywhere inside the transmission, and the transmission is failing. And by failing, it can be as simple as slurred shifts or shifts that aren't happening or shifts that are harsh to something tragic like the rear wheels locking up, which is very, very dangerous. So this is a lot of vehicles, and it includes all the big pickups, the Silverado, the Sierra, and it includes... the Escalade and the Tahoe and the Suburban and what am I forgetting here? The Yukon. So a lot of their big vehicles. Interestingly, the same transmission is also used in the Ford Mustang, but we haven't heard anything about that.
Okay, I'm going to raise my hand for the dumb question. One would think that when you have engineering departments from General Motors and Ford, that now you've got, okay, you've got a whole lot of really, 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 really smart people that are going to make this really wonderful whiz-bang thingy. And then you have this kind of a recall and these kind of problems. I know things can happen, but my initial impression would be when you have experts from two companies working on something that the result should be a reasonably close to flawless. Medic over to Tom's house. You should have kind of a reasonably flawless rollout. And that sure hasn't happened in this case.
No,
this transmission has been around for a while, though, and it's very well reviewed. One of the things about recalls like this is this valve part that we're discussing, probably not produced by General Motors, but by a Tier 2 or Tier 3 supplier. And they tend not to call out suppliers when these things happen. And it's possible that Ford and GM engineers weren't very involved in actually developing this valve. But that said, it's still disappointing because they should be doing the quality checks and proofing the product and things like that. So, yeah, it's a big disappointment because you want things like these vehicles to be very reliable.
Tom, can we talk about Toyota? Because we've talked about Ford being saddled with recalls. Toyota has had its share of recalls this year already. We're just now to March 1st, right?
Yeah, uncharacteristic recalls, too.
Well, I have a story that the recalls have been expanded to 1 million vehicles in the United States, the 20 to 2026 vehicle years, due to a software flaw in the parking assistant that can cause the rear view camera to freeze or go blank, increasing crash risks. So now we're up to 1 million. Again, that's not the end of the world, but that's your Camry and Highlander and the RAV4 and the Prius and Sienna and Venza. Crown, some Lexus, the ESGX, so a number of vehicles, and everybody will be notified, but that's upped. We did talk, though, I guess it was the end of last year, about Toyota's engine problems.
And that where they were replacing not just parts, but the whole engine in a ton of vehicles. Are they still working on that?
They are, and they will probably expand the recall, too. Right now, most of the vehicles that have that engine, it's a 3.4-liter turbocharged V6 engine, really a nice engine in its applications. They have not recalled all of the vehicles that have that engine yet, but I don't think there's anything that separates the ones that haven't been recalled from the ones that have, so except that maybe there haven't been a statistically significant amount of failures yet, but they will ultimately probably recall all of these engines. Wow. Very expensive.
Now, a listener has a 25 Toyota 3.5 liter, and he said he's plagued with debris in the engine.
And wasn't this part of the problem with some of the other engine recalls?
That is the actually the problem. He says 3.5. Toyota has called this engine 3.4 and 3.5, so we're probably talking about the same engine.
Okay.
But yeah, there has been very fine metal bits from manufacturing in the vehicle, and that's not that uncommon. The problem is that those bits are doing damage, which isn't something that used to happen. And you guys probably remember that into the 70s and 80s, you used to buy a new car, and you'd go back for an oil change after 1,000 miles or after 300 miles, and that was to get that stuff out of the engine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That became unnecessary as machining got better, but the problem now is that manufacturers, especially General Motors, which has this exact same problem with the big 6.2-liter V8 it puts in its big trucks, is that they're failing because these shavings are they're in engines that have very, very, very light oil, and that oil doesn't seem to be protecting the engine from these shavings. It does a great job of lubricating the engine and keeping the engine cool and doing the stuff that oil should do. But these little shavings seem to be much more damaging when you use the light oil.
Sure.
This underscores something that I've done with a lot of our vehicles. 3,000 miles or 3 months, change oil.
And I've done that. It's such cheap insurance.
Yeah.
But we've actually had people challenge us on it. Oh, you don't need to do that now. Like, wait a minute.
Yep,
I'm willing
to
pay you, and this is what I want to have done.
Yep.
Yeah, it can't hurt to do that. When I worked at a service station when I was a kid, I used to work on a lot of limousines, and those guys would change the oil every 2,000 miles.
Really?
And the Palatine Police Department also used to sometimes bring their cars by when they didn't have the capacity at their own facility to change their oil every 2,000 miles. And these were vehicles, obviously, that would see like 100,000 miles of wear every single year. So clearly people who kind of had an idea what was going on were really into oil changes. And it's so easy. It's so simple. It's so good for the engine. Now, we do use synthetic oil now, and it does last longer. That's mm-hmm. true. But do what you're comfortable with, and certainly mm-hmm. don't wait longer than the numbers. Don't mm-hmm. do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm segueing, but I'm putting on a turn signal. Thanks to a 630 area code who says it was The Horse by Cliff Nobles. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Oh.
That was the hit version, and that was the one that was supposed to be the background for the vocal, but they made it an instrumental, and it became a hit.
Listener Ken says, I always buy a two-year-old car, typically returned to the dealer from a lease plan. Seems to be the best value. However, this time I had a Lincoln with a CVT transmission. Can you tell me if they've worked the bugs out of this transmission? I ended up spending almost $5,000 getting it repaired.
Wow.
I'm so afraid of them, but I see more and more cars have them. And I think the CVTs historically have been like... you either love it or hate it.
And yeah. I'm curious to hear your take on it, Tom, because any vehicle that we tested that had a CVT, I enjoyed it. I thought that, for the most part, it was pretty seamless. Now, we didn't test them for 100,000 miles, but our initial impression was fine transmission.
Yeah, Nissan famously had some trouble with their CVTs. And if you go back far enough, Saturn had some problems.
Mm-hmm.
And Chrysler, it was Daimler Chrysler then, in vehicles like the Dodge Caliper, had some problems with them too. And by problems, I mean not just reliability, but that they were awful. They were just awful mm-hmm. to drive. But now Honda and Subaru, for example, put CVTs in almost everything. And those cars are absolutely wonderful. So we have gotten past, I think, the primary or the early days of CVT development. Yeah. But they're of an interesting design. For people who don't know, CVT stands for continuously variable transmission. And manufacturers like them because they weigh less than regular transmissions and because they provide better fuel economy because there's an infinite gear set within certain parameters. And what happens is inside them, if it doesn't work right, there's basically – one of the designs is two cones next to each other and a belt that slides between them. And the ratios change as the belt slides between the two cones. It's a really interesting design, but it can wear prematurely. And there is some maintenance required for that. So if you buy a vehicle with a CVT, you may have to get the oil change, something you probably never had to do with a conventional automatic. So make sure you're doing the maintenance.
Okay, I got to take you back to Sirius. A listener said you guys started talking at the beginning of the segment on Ford recalls.
Right.
He has a 2018 Ford Explorer. He had it in to the dealer for oil change or something, and they told him that there was a big recall for the Ford Explorers that year, the 2018s. I looked it up. It's kind of a serious one, isn't it, Tom? The rear.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Rear suspension.
Yeah, 413,000 2017 through 2019 Explorers for a piece of hardware. It's the rear toe link, which is a part of the rear suspension, and it's part of the independent rear suspension. The Ford uses kind of a nice, sophisticated rear suspension, but this link is going bad, and if it does, the tires can misalign, and you can be in really big trouble if you're traveling at speed.
You could lose control. He said they told him that you could lose control if that happens. And I thought he had a typo, but it is, in fact, TOE link, because I was thinking it should be TOW, but it's TOE link.
TOE link, yeah. It controls how far a tire goes in or out. We think tires are always facing straight, and that's not actually the case. There is a range of motion that they're allowed, and the TOE link does, in fact, to some degree control that. And if it breaks, they're in big trouble. By the way, there are two of them back there, and they're both susceptible to the problem, one on each side.
Well, I'm glad that he checked in with that, and I guess it was pretty startling when he was told, you know what, we need to fix this.
Yeah. What are you going to be driving over the next couple weeks that you're looking forward to?
Oh, I'm going to be driving kind of a conventional thing, but I'm happy to drive it, and that's the Subaru Forester. It's been lightly freshened, but the Forester is Subaru's compact crossover. And no matter what Subaru is or was, there are always three vehicles that are selling really well for them. One is the Outback, one is the Forester, and one is the little Crosstrek. And they make up the bulk of Subaru sales. And they're all excellent vehicles. They really are. And they are all CVTs now, too, which is interesting, just to say it's topical. But I am looking forward to driving this. My wife is looking for a new car at some point, and we're big Subaru fans. So
I think
this is a personal test drive as well.
We had John Davis on during the auto show, and he was giving the Driver's Choice Awards, and Subaru was the winner.
Yeah.
He said it's just when you think it's just a good old standby, they freshen it up.
In fact, there were two cars that he was really excited about. Well, a lot of the cars, but specifically the Subaru and also then the Dodge Charger.
Yes.
Because you could basically – I'm fascinated by – the engineering involved with this, because you want a two-door, you got it. You want a four-door, you got it. You want electric, you got it. You want an ICE engine, you got it. All with the same chassis. And that's pretty astounding, isn't it, Tom?
It is, yeah. And it's to their good fortune that they did design the vehicle that way, because it has not sold well as an electric vehicle. When they redesigned it, what was it, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, it came out electric only. It's for 2026 now that we're going to see Stellantis's excellent inline six, they call it the Hurricane Six, slotted under the hood of those vehicles. Should make them very entertaining. Part of the problem, though, is that people who like vehicles like this, high-performance, mm-hmm. Sporty vehicles like this, really want the Hemi back under the hood of these things. And they weren't initially designed for that, but they're probably coming back, because now that Stellantis or any other manufacturer no longer has to answer about fuel economy standards,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why not?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, because anytime we drove anything with a Hemi, basically it's a fun engine that has a car built around it.
That has been the case. And Dodge has sold so many Challengers and Chargers over the last decade, really over the last 15 years, by simply updating what's around the Hemi engine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there have been updates to it. There's the Hemi and the Red Eye and the Hellcat. And these have all been very entertaining vehicles. But one of the things that they do is get all that free advertising because they make magazine covers and people cover them.
Yeah.
They're just such big news vehicles.
Okay, well, I know we need to let you go and take your medication, but before we do that, the Blatant Plug Light, again, people can follow you at and find you at, and when is the next Car Talk, Car Stuff podcast?
Tuesday, the Consumer Guide Car Stuff podcast is new on Tuesday morning. We're going to be talking about robotics and software-defined vehicles, and these are terms that have been thrown around a lot in the industry. We've got an expert on. Who's going to talk to us about what this all means. So, and what it means to consumers. So we're excited to have that conversation, but check us out at consumerguide.com. The Car Stuff podcast can be downloaded any place.
And speaking of the Car Stuff podcast, if people want to listen, because I love this, the Car Stuff podcast is just that. It's a podcast, but you can listen to it live as you are doing it. And how would they do that?
Mondays at 3 p.m. Chicago time, we record live. It's on the Talk Zone Radio Network. So TalkZone.com.
Okay.
And I don't want to leave any unfinished business here. Listeners said, never mind. I got too many things in front of me. So if I find it, I will privately ask you their question. And because we're here to serve, Tom, you know.
We will next talk to you from Florida.
Florida, yeah.
In 2 weeks.
In March, yeah.
Sounds good.
Okay, you just take care of yourself. Thank you, Tom.
And Tom?
Take care, guys.
Rabbit, rabbit, rabbit.
I found myself immediately reflecting on the fact that the time changes next weekend,
mm-hmm.
and how working as a waitress, you as a musician, that was the night that we lived for.
Yep.
Because we still got paid, but we got to go home an hour earlier.
Yep.
And in your case, you actually worked at places where in the fall,
they would say, oh, yeah, don't worry about this extra hour. We'll make it up
in the spring.
And you were never working at the same place in spring. But that's one of many reasons why I joined the union, because union said, you will get paid for the hours you are working.
Yes, yes, yes. In fact, I was in the union for waitresses, too, for the food service people.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very adamant about that pay these people.
Yeah.
It's funny how that song brought it all back, because that's how that song got started on our show. We both mm-hmm. had experienced closing times when the lights would flicker and you go, thank goodness, finally the lights are flickering. We can get rid of these people. But then sometimes the lights would go up in the place and you'd see them. You're like, we need dim lighting.
But and I know I've told the story before. We always used to take a little extra time packing our instruments because we didn't want to be driving home with the drunks.
Yeah, let them go home.
Let everybody get out of here and then we'll...
Okay. Right. Okay. Closing song means it's our last caller, and we're going to keep it simple. It's my turn to choose a mm-hmm. number, and we're going to go to the top and say hello to Peter.
Hey, Peter.
Peter.
Hello.
Hello.
Where are you calling from, Peter?
Chicago Heights.
Yes.
My new living abode.
Yes. Well, Peter, thank you. I think I saw you check in at the beginning of the show. And what was Boston?
That was my 15-pound wonder boy I sent you a picture of.
Yes.
Buddy.
He's not really 15 pounds.
Yes, he is.
You are kidding.
Whoa.
He's a big boy.
Hey, guess he is.
He's large framed.
So does he take you for a walk?
Pretty much.
But he's good.
If he decides to take a nap on me, I better want to take a nap too.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, that's good. He's kind of like a good snuggler, right?
Oh, he's a great snuggler. I have found him under the blanket at night sometimes. He will worm his way in and just cuddle up and
Peter
makes a hot water bottle seem like insignificant.
I'm looking here at a text that came in not too long ago. Boston is a state of mind.
Yeah, I just saw that.
What prompted that?
Yeah, when you were talking, I think it was with Susie Boggess, and talked about states, and then she said Boston in the middle of the list of states.
And then, she said, I know Boston's not a state, and she kept talking.
Right.
Oh, good. You picked up on that. Yeah.
And that's when I sent that in. I just said, hey.
Boston. Well, that's weird because it just literally got time stamped a few minutes
ago.
Yeah,
for some reason, it didn't come through earlier. It literally just came in at,
that's wild.
1:45.
Yeah.
That's weird.
That's odd. That is odd.
Yeah.
Although we have been getting a ton of text tonight.
So maybe
so
that's
I wonder
slowed
if it got
down?
Backed up. I don't know.
Let's blame
That's
it.
Unusual.
Could be.
Let's blame it on March 1st. How's that?
Yeah, that sounds good. It's my natal month, and things can be kind of odd in it. I was born on National Hangover Day, by the way.
Were you? I was just telling Steve off the air, I was looking at the things that happened in the month of March, and Tuesday is Stupid Forward Day, and during the break, he said, well, why would I want to say stupid forward? I go, no, soup. And I kept trying to say soup, as in slurping soup.
So you want to throw soup at somebody?
No, you're supposed to make soup and share it with someone. You know,
well,
yeah.
I was born the day after St. Patty's.
Oh, of course, as in the big hangover.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. Uh-huh. That's what I did. I was giving my vitals to an intern at a hospital once, and I told him my birthday, and he clipped back at me, oh, National Hangover Day.
Well, we won't be here for National Hangover Day, but I think the big celebration is going to be, as they often do, the Saturday before.
Yeah, yeah. And there is... What is it? In Beverly, they have that... we had friends that used to go for that incredible... Irish pub crawl.
Yeah. Crawl is the operative word, right? Yes.
Exactly.
In fact, we knew a couple where the woman used to drive her husband and his friends to the various pubs so they could enjoy the day.
She
and
was
then
the designated
come out of the car.
Yeah, the designated driver. And they would just, she said, by the time that we stopped at the fourth or fifth, they would like be crawling out to the car.
Yeah, there's only one downside to having the birthday of the 18th, and that is nobody wants to get together for a party.
I can't imagine why.
you could go to the...
We'll go next weekend. Yeah.
But you say you could go to the Jewel and you could get you some Green River. I saw it yesterday at the Green River. I'm like, yes.
Do they still make Green
yes,
River?
Yes, they do.
Wow.
In bottles, too.
In the big old glass.
In a long time.
Wow.
Yes.
I haven't either, Peter.
And let me tell you, Diet Green River, I'm like, no. If you're going to have Green River, just do the real thing. Don't waste your time with the diet. Yeah. But they had the Green River right next to the potatoes and the heads of cabbage. So it's like, yeah, get your Irish on, you know, and then wander over there to the corned beef.
And my mom was born on St.
Patrick's
Day.
Yes,
and
yes,
her,
yes.
Her name was, her maiden name was Mary Elizabeth Carroll, and my grandparents on her side literally came over on the boat from County Cork in Ireland, and my mom was
so Irish.
She loved all things potatoes.
Literally, Peter.
Potato soup with her potatoes. And
we go to a restaurant. She said, I'll have the potato soup. I'll have a baked potato and pack me up a potato to go home. We're like, okay.
And when she passed away, she was buried with a ceramic baked potato.
Baked potato with butter.
Sounds good.
You know what?
Now, here's the thing. I love potatoes, too, and I can't claim any Irish at all. Matter of fact, I have a great-grandfather who came over from Inverness, Scotland.
Oh.
I would love to visit Scotland. Yeah. We have some friends over there, and some of the pictures that they post are just extraordinary.
His clan, the McCrays, were the... their heritage was protecting the Éireann Dóin Castle, which is the most pictured castle in the entire of Scotland.
Hmm.
Matter of fact, it was used once, the silhouette of it was used once in a AT&T long distance commercial, and it was so funny to look at because they showed somebody lighting up the lights moving from room to room.
Uh-huh.
The lit up windows were in no alignment to the actual structure, which is how they painted them on the black.
Oh, okay. And the funny thing is that was before Photoshop. See, nowadays they could make that look scary good. Peter, it's a pleasure to catch up with you. You're wonderful to tune in on Saturday nights. Thank you. And we're going to send you out an official WGN Radio t-shirt. And thanks for listening.
So hold on, and Julian will get some information from you off the air. Boy, this has gone by fast. We are down to about a little more than a minute, and so many things to get to. We didn't even get to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees.
Because I'm mad at them.
Yeah.
Until they put...
They need to put Neil Sedaka in the Rock... They really, really
or
do.
Or at least address it. Say, eventually we will.
Yeah.
But after we were talking about him tonight, remembering him in the hundreds and hundreds of songs...
It makes me mad that he's not in there.
I'm like... Of course, we don't really.
Yeah, there's like a whole. There's the rest of the story that will be in our second book. As we wrap this up again, we remind you next week we don't know what time we're going to be. We think it's going to be around 10:30-ish, March Madness time, and we will be down in Florida for the next 3 weeks. Thank you so much for hanging out with us.
Right.
Thanks to Julian and Bob and Ron and Gabe and...
And Krista. She stopped
and
by
Krista,
tonight.
Yes.
As we talked about our friend Aubrey.
And most of all, thanks to you for hanging out with us. We'll talk to you next week. Stay safe.